price. You want Dale Edward. Dale builds amazing websites with streaming video. Being a pro photographer ensures high-quality content. Websites, wedding, and special events photography, all at a reasonable price. Go to DaleEdward.com or call 277-9847. That's 277-9847.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Cammy McCormick. Wildfires burning in Florida are choking the state with smoke and ash as nervous residents wait for word on whether they'll have to leave their homes.
I have no idea. Just nervous.
Lake City residents have been evacuated and wait for word on when they'll return and to what.
Everything that I own is there, except for my wife's car. So, you know, I got a lot of stuff to lose.
And in California, on Catalina Island, the day has been spent trying to get in supplies to battle a wildfire there. KNX reporter Ron Kilgore is watching what could be a tough fight.
You've got the high winds coming up. You've got very, very stubborn terrain. What's different now is you've got more manpower and vehicles, but it's still very, very tough to reach these fires. And almost as soon as they drop the water on them, they dry out and start going again.
And that fire is only 10% contained. Today's graduation ceremonies at Virginia Tech have been as solemn as they were celebratory, as the school remembers those who aren't on hand to receive their diplomas this year.
This is Jim Crisul on the Virginia Tech campus. A bittersweet mid-afternoon commencement for 1,200 Virginia Tech graduate students. Honorary degrees were awarded to 9 graduate students gunned down April 16th. Tech President Charles Steger.
This afternoon, we are proud to recognize and celebrate with our graduate students. We are also acutely aware that our hearts are saddened and our minds are troubled by the tragic events of April 16th.
All 32 students and professors who died here nearly a month ago will be remembered during tonight's university-wide commencement. Jim Crisul, CBS News on the Virginia Tech campus.
Now that most of the additional U.S. troops are in Iraq and Baghdad, security operations well underway, one U.S. commander is indicating it still may not be enough to win the war, especially in increasingly dangerous Diyala province north of Baghdad, where the violence has increased as Baghdad has been reinforced.
I do not have enough soldiers right now in Diyala province to get that security situation moving.
General Benjamin Mixon says he's been promised more troops. So who has got the best strategy for Iraq? A new poll finds Americans dissatisfied with both parties.
I'm Jim Taylor. Just 4 months ago, they took over Congress with such enthusiasm and promise. Now, with little to show but a lot of bitter political standoff, we the people are giving the democratically controlled Congress approval marks in the same range as the president's. Not good. AP Ipsos survey finds only 35% approve of how Congress is handling its job. That's down 5 points in the last month. Still, Congress approval rating this week is 10 points higher than a year ago when Republicans were in control.
Republican presidential candidate Mitt Romney is expected to list his financial assets at between $190 and $250 million. He made his fortune as a management consultant. He's been extended his officially filing deadline for his financial disclosure statements. And on Wall Street today, the Dow finished up 111 points at 13,326. The Nasdaq was higher by 28. This is CBS News.
If your car or truck is ready for new tires before your wallet is, hurry to your Ford or Lincoln Mercury dealership. Buy tires now and pay later with our genuine service credit card. Plus, bring in any competitor's current price ad on the name brand tires we sell within 30 days of purchase, and we'll beat that price, guaranteed. New tires, installed by 4 trained experts. Buy now and pay later. See your Ford or Lincoln Mercury dealership for details today. Offer ends June 30th.
Hey, Mama, happy Mother's Day. Let's take your worries all away. Give you a special Mother's Day. Let's go out back tonight.
Let go of where to go this Mother's Day. Go out back, where the pasta is bold, the steaks are juicy, the chicken tender. It's a nice way of saying thanks. No worries.
Let's go out back tonight.
This Mother's Day, let go.
Every day is Mother's Day.
Go out back.
British Prime Minister Tony Blair is exiting, and his likely successor, Gordon Brown, is signaling he may have a different approach.
Gordon Brown will almost certainly become Britain's next prime minister, and he announced his candidacy with this endorsement from the current leader, Tony Blair.
He's got what it takes to lead the country with distinction.
Brown didn't give many specifics about how his administration will differ from Blair's. He did say, though, that he's committed to countering the spread of anti-Western extremism.
Working with our allies to win the battle of hearts and minds at home and abroad.
Brown made no mention of Britain's relationship with the U.S. Larry Miller, CBS News, London.
The Pope is on a visit to Brazil and speaking out against sexual promiscuity. More than 70% of Brazil's citizens are Catholic, but sex before marriage is common. I'm Cammie McCormick, CBS News.
If you're living in a space that's too small or too large or too old or just too ugly, here's what you do. Take a 2x4 to the problem. Maybe some 2x6s. Heck, just take all your lumber and give it to a member of the American Institute of Architects. We'll design a home that fits your needs and your budget to a T. Call an AIA architect early, so your living space won't be too this or too that, but just right. AIA. Good design makes a difference. Visit AIA.org.
And now, Orkin and the Carpenter Ants.
She moved into her new house, put out a garden.
For carpenter ant protection that performs, call 1-800-ORKINMAN or visit orkin.com.
Peter B. Collins!
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Gosh, that was a little loud, wasn't it? Well, you can blame me. I'm the operator here, and I'm your humble host, Peter B. Collins. Glad to be back on the air after a couple of days where my voice was missing in action. We got to make up for lost time here. Lots to talk about today. Up first, Joshua Holland from Alternet will join us to talk about news from Iraq. The lawmakers there say they're kind of fed up with the occupation. And on this side of the Great Divide, George W. Bush is now ready to accept benchmarks. We'll discuss that in the first half hour. Then we're going to take a look at Wolfie's World Bank. Samir Dosani will join us. He's an activist who is very knowledgeable about the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund. He'll join us to talk about the extended scandal around Paul Wolfowitz and his girlfriend. She didn't get an interest-free loan from the World Bank, but close. Next hour, Rick Perlstein, who's written for The Village Voice and is known for his biography of Goldwater. He'll join us to talk about the tainted food that has been shipped into the United States, affecting pets and now humans. Also on today's show, did you hear about the Hamas Mickey Mouse? His name is Farfour, an animated character that has offered up some pretty extreme commentary on TV in the Middle East. Well, we're going to talk to a Muslim cartoonist. This guy is great. Shahid Mahmood will join us from Toronto coming up in our second hour today. And his Bradness has a full plate. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com, as usual, in our third and final hour on Fridays. He's got Ann Coulter with an FBI boyfriend who helped fix a case against her involving voter fraud. The U.S. attorney in West Palm Beach didn't get involved. We're just not sure why. Also, we're going to talk about a powerful video Brad has at the Brad blog. An exchange in Congress yesterday between embattled Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez and Congressman Wexler. You got to hear it, and you will, right here on the Peter B. Collins Show. We'll also talk about the activities in Rush Holt's committee in the House, where they declined to take a hard look at the Clint Curtis claims of a stolen election in Florida, while they did take seriously the election fraud claims of Christine Jennings. We'll find out more about all that later today here on the Peter B. Collins Show when Brad Friedman joins us. And I would like to just issue a bit of an apology. I love to do this program, and it pains me when things happen like my voice fails, and we had to feed you reruns the last 2 days. So I hope you will accept my humble apology.
Excuse me.
And I am fortified here. I want you to know I want to thank the folks who make Canadian Club. That's what I've been medicating myself with in the evenings and daytime hot tea and a little throat spray here. And I got a bottle handy in case things start to fade on me. Joshua Holland joins us first today. He writes for Alternet and co-authored a piece that was posted a day or so ago with our friend Raed Jarar. Raed is the Iraq consultant for the American Friends Service Committee and Global Exchange in San Francisco as well. Joshua Holland, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Peter.
Well, it's my pleasure. Your headline reads here, majority of Iraqi lawmakers now reject occupation. Is this news, or is it simply that they've gotten more vocal and more official about their objection to our occupation?
Well, the news is that this week, for the first time, a majority of them have signed on to a petition formally requesting that that they have an opportunity to vote on a demand that the U.S. withdraw forces, or set a timetable to withdraw forces.
Mm-hmm.
They have made previous efforts to get a majority and have failed by 5 or 6 or 10 votes in the past on 2 previous occasions. This was the first time that they crossed over the magic number of 138 lawmakers. There are mm-hmm. 275 members of the Iraqi National Council.
Mm-hmm. So 144 signed on to it. That is significant. Now, there is not a single voice in Iraq, just as there is not in the United States, and I understand that President Talabani issued a statement that he thinks he'd like troops, U.S. troops, to stay in Iraq at least 2 more years.
What we're seeing is a divide, really, in Baghdad that's somewhat similar to the things that we're seeing in Washington. That is, between the legislative house and the executive. So it's not only has Talabani come out, but so has Maliki said that he wants to keep troops in Iraq for the foreseeable future. We don't know exactly when they would be able to leave. And we're seeing the emergence of a bloc in the parliament. I think this is the significance of the story. That is really a trans-sectarian bloc. They represent lawmakers from all of the different parties, all of Iraq's major sects and ethnic groups. And they're really a nationalist bloc. And so we're seeing, for the first time, a group come together and say, we're not representing Sunni or Shia or Kurds. We're really looking for sovereign country where we don't have external interference. And I think that one of the things that they're thinking about is being free of both the United States and Iran. So this is a significant development.
Mm-hmm. Well, and really it takes a misguided government like the one that Bush runs to unite the fractious groups in Iraq. What they can't agree on is that the occupation is a big problem and that they can't move forward with their internal reconciliation as long as we are there. And that's kind of the sticking point, you know, the chicken and egg thing. And I really pity the Iraqis because Dick Cheney made another one of those surprise visits there this week. I loved seeing him get off the plane there with that huge Kevlar vest that made him look like 80 pounds heavier than he actually is. But, you know, he's there delivering this tough message. And it's so hypocritical that for domestic consumption in the United States, this administration says no timelines. Bush relented yesterday and said, okay, benchmarks. But he just vetoed a bill that had been reduced to benchmarks. Didn't have any timelines left after the Senate and the conference committee overhauled the House version of what was a weak bill to begin with. And so on for domestic consumption, they tell us that we're in it to stay, we're in it to win it. And then they send Gates and then Cheney over to tell the Iraqis, hey, you know, our leash is really short, and that Pelosi woman, I think she's serious. So there's a double game being played here, isn't there?
Well, you know, there's a lot of contradictions in what they're trying to do and what they're saying they're trying to do. I mean, you know, this divide that we're seeing between kind of nationalists and separatists, and by separatists we mean people who favor really a partitioning the country into three autonomous zones roughly along the ethnic and sectarian divides that exist,
mm-hmm.
with a weak central government in Baghdad. They're actually the ones that the U.S. is supporting at this point. And if you think about it, their goals are antithetical to at least the stated goals coming out of the administration, right? The nationalist bloc, who we will, you know, many of whose leaders we've dubbed thugs and criminals and extremists, you know, they're the only political force right now that has at the top of its agenda really quelling the sectarian violence that's happening at the neighborhood level and rejecting foreign interference, both of us, again, and of Iran. So, you know, these are the goals that we say that we want, and yet we're undercutting the very people that are trying to advance them right now. So, you know, these are the contradictions coming out in the policy, and I agree with you about Dick Cheney. I mean, you know, it seems like maybe 4 years ago this kind of, you know, good cop, bad cop, the attempts to urge the Iraqi government to get it together in terms of confronting the militias and doing a disarmament program and all of these things that are universally understood as prerequisites to moving on, you know, these are the very things that we undercut mm-hmm. at this point when we either saber, you know, rattle our sabers or you know, try to direct things from Washington, D.C. at all.
Right, and they've been reduced now to threatening us with the unknown, which is their predictions of chaos if the U.S. does pull out within the time frame suggested by the Congress. And, of course, it's not really clear. There is some risk involved. We don't know exactly how much of this civil war will continue once we announce and start to pull out our troops. But it's a foregone conclusion that we're going to leave eventually, and it's a silly game to play to keep putting American lives at risk and actually seeing them lost at the rate of almost 10 a day now for a policy that has clearly failed and a series of empty gestures that are designed to make us look tough while we know that the reality is far different.
I couldn't agree more, and right now it's a foot race, right? There is this whole political movement in Washington, and you see they're slowly shifting the debate right now. Just as you said, it's not so much a question of if we're going to leave sometime in the next few years, it's when, it's how. That's even a victory in the last few months. I feel like things have been moving in the right direction, but it's a foot race to see you know, which parliamentary movement is going to win the day first. And it's entirely possible, and I think at this point probable, that, you know, situation in Iraq will come to a head and the decision to withdraw will not be wholly made in Washington, D.C.
Yeah, by politicians. Those damn politicians
right.
can't tell the generals what to do. Unless, of course, it's the unelected president of the United States. Joshua Holland, stay with us. We're going to take a break and return. We're talking about a piece that he co-authored with Ed Girard that's up at alternate.org right now. You can read it for yourself. You got a question or a comment? Bring it on. Yeah, toll free at 888-5-PETER-B. 888-573-8372. You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Our radio show for the whole family. Dysfunctional family. Stephanie Miller on AM 540 KRXA, 6 to 9 a.m. weekdays.
Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff,
Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares. The Grove Market in Pacific Grove is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Locally owned and operated for 37 years by the Higuera family, the Grove Market boasts the finest selections of just-picked conventional and organic produce our Central Coast farms have to offer. The Grove Market's full-service meat department specializes in the highest quality, choice, fresh-cut, and prepared meats. Local artisanal bakeries deliver breads and other delectable baked goods hot from the oven every morning. To perfect your gourmet home-cooked meal, choose from the Grove Market's outstanding selection of Monterey wines. The Grove Market features competitive prices, personalized service, and home delivery in PG and New Monterey. You can't go wrong at the Grove Market. So shop Monday through Saturday from 8 to 7 and 9 to 6 on Sundays in downtown Pacific Grove, 242 Forest Avenue, just above Lighthouse. The Grove Market, where the locals shop.
This week on Rock Rollin' Real Estate, meet Jim Ross, president of National Real Estate Holdings, as he shares his thoughts and ideas on investing in real estate. Get ready for our big event with Jim and National Real Estate Holdings and IPX 1031 to learn about how to use a 1031 exchange to invest in real estate properties. It's coming up on Tuesday, May 22nd at the Santa Clara Marriott starting at 6 p.m. For more information about the show, call 408-892-3376. Rock Rollin' Real Estate, Sunday mornings at 10, right here on KRXA 540.
I am attorney Sean Mills. Sometimes life does not take the direction that you plan. If you find yourself in need of an honest attorney, call me. I can advise you on both criminal and civil matters. Do not settle for an attorney who simply went to college and law school when you can work with an attorney with significant life experience who uses a common sense approach to everyday legal problems. If you think you need an attorney, I will be glad to offer you a no-obligation consultation and evaluation of your legal issue with no sugarcoating. If you think you have a potential legal issue, it is important that you speak to a qualified attorney as soon as possible. Call me at 831-648-7060. That's 831-648-7060. I am attorney Sean Mills.
Locally owned, the Ugly Mug Coffee House in Soquel Village. Always lively, always wired. We serve the best organic, shade-grown coffees, loose leaf teas, original bar drinks, and delectable goodies in a friendly community atmosphere. Open every day, 6 a.m. till 9 p.m., complete with music, Wi-Fi, and the craziest regulars in Santa Cruz. Meet your friends or just bring yourself to the Ugly Mug, Soquel Drive at Porter Street, for lively conversations and the best cappuccino in town. Hey, what do you want? Rare frickin' sunshine? Delicious.
The Ugly Mug, Soquel Drive and Porter Street in Soquel.
And the Peter B. Collins Show rolls on. It's 22 minutes after the hour. Lines are open if you'd like to join us to talk about Iraq, policy in Washington, policy in Baghdad. Things are shifting. It's a very interesting time. 888-5-PETER-B is our toll-free number. You can also email me, humblehost@peterbcollins.com. Coming up in a few minutes, Samir Dosani will join us to talk about Paul Wolfowitz and his tenuous hold, his tenuous grip on the presidency of the World Bank.
This ain't no technological breakdown. Oh no, this is the road to hell.
Joshua Holland with us from alternet.org. And Joshua, they haven't filled that position for the war czar yet, have they?
It's a tough gig.
Yeah.
It's a tough gig. You wouldn't want it yourself, I'll tell you.
Now do you think they might tap Wolfowitz for that job? I mean, he's going to be unemployed real soon. And he, of course, was the architect of the fabulous plan that got us into Iraq. He's the one who told us how it wasn't going to cost us more than a few billion dollars here or there.
He said that the Iraqi oil would pay for all of the reconstruction costs and reimburse us for all of the cost of toppling the Saddam Hussein regime.
Well, don't you think we should give him a chance to complete the job and prove that he was right?
You know, I think soon he will be kind of sinking into obscurity at some wingnut welfare place in a think tank.
Yeah, I'm sure they have a nice padded office in the corner waiting for him.
On his feet.
I got to ask you, I've been so impressed with your co-author on this piece, Ra'ed Jarrar. And he, of course, is an Iraqi and has some incredible contacts there. Talk a little bit about how he helped you research the story, and to what extent do you believe what you told us in the first segment, that the opposition to the occupation really is producing the kind of reduction in ethnic barriers, reconciliation, that Washington keeps trying to order to occur?
Well, Ra'ed is a great writing partner, obviously, when you're talking about Iraq, and it's very difficult for Americans to report from here. He's able to call up people in leadership positions in all of the major parties and get them on the phone, which is, you know, an unbelievable asset for us at Alternet.
Mm-hmm.
On this story, yeah, we're following this, and the significance really is again the formation of this bloc that encompasses all of the different Iraqi groups, the major Iraqi groups. They will now have a position, and we're going to be following this story. We're soon going to be reporting. There's going to be some more developments that they come together, and they're going to announce the formation of a new coalition. You heard it here first, I guess.
All right.
And this is going to be a group that not only is going to be dealing with the issue of timetable for U.S. withdrawal, but also other issues that are of concern, such as the allocation and the ultimate contractual basis by which Iraq's oil revenues are exploited.
Now, Joshua, come on. That's already been established. 80% go to the multinational oil companies, and the Iraqis can fight over the rest.
Well, it hasn't. I mean, that is, you're referring to a draft oil law, which has been leaked, and it's been approved by the cabinet. And again, this is a cabinet made up primarily of separatists. And it has not yet come up for a vote and been ratified by the Assembly. This group that is forming is going to have the votes to block the oil law, which is mm-hmm. another, you know, really significant development.
And so do you think they'll take that step before their 2-month summer vacation or after?
I think that I think we're going to see the status quo mm-hmm. remain in place throughout the summer, both in Baghdad and in Washington, D.C.
I think you're probably right. Richard in Carmel Valley has a comment. Go ahead, Richard.
Yes, I was just curious. I haven't heard the Democrats say when Bush repeatedly says, and the Republicans say, we're going to hold the Democrats accountable for not supporting the troops if they don't provide all the funding we want. Why wouldn't, if it's up to him to allocate the funds, once the funds are appropriated, why don't the Democrats hold him accountable if he does not fund things that support our troops rather than give the money to Halliburton and to Blackwater and the other contractors?
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you say it's going to go to our troops, it's going to give them the armor they need, and it's going to help them withdraw in the most peaceful way that they can? And then if he goes against that, if the president says, no, I'd rather fund Halliburton, then the Democrats have a very legitimate case to push for impeachment.
Well, Don Asmussen, the wacky cartoonist in the San Francisco Chronicle, is saying that the short-term funding program should include $40 gift cards for all the troops. That way we can say we're supporting the troops. Joshua might have a more serious comment, and you got 20 seconds, Joshua.
Well, the defense supplemental actually does specify an enormous amount of money for body armor, which makes it much more difficult politically to oppose.
Mm-hmm. All right, gentlemen, I'm out of time for this segment. Joshua, great to talk with you, and good work.
Thanks so much for having me, Peter.
Richard, thank you for your call. Coming up next, we'll take a look at Paul Wolfowitz, the guy with spit on his comb and holes in his socks.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
My name's Todd the Taxi Driver, and today I'd like to talk to you about ethical behavior and what's expected of different people within our society. Individuals have many different roles in society. We have our everyday roles, you know, just being ourselves. We have public servants, like firemen, police officers. We have someone we talk about quite often around here, politicians. And then we have members of the media. I personally can relate to two of those roles. As an individual, do I live up to the high standards I set for myself each day? Probably not. But as a member of the media, I try very hard too. I feel the role of the media is to be the eyes and ears of you, the public. We should report what we learn to you, the listener, objectively, so that you can make informed decisions about those things going on around you. Unfortunately, many people today in the media have forgotten what their role truly is. This is Todd the Taxi Driver, and I'm watching out for you each and every day.
Come on in, and you will see the Central Avenue Bakery. Smell the bread, try the scones. Everything so tasty, you want to take it all home. Vegetarian is a good affair. We make our meals in a kosher kitchen. I'll make mine falafel with hummus stew. A side of couscous and a vibe of ganoush, yeah. Open at 7 every day. Have a cup of coffee or your morning latte. Come on in and sit right down. It's the friendliest place in town. Central Avenue Bakery in PG.
For an unforgettable omelet experience, visit the Central Avenue Bakery today. 173 Central Avenue at the corner of Dewey, PG.
Hi, I'm Patty Ross, Realtor. What pops into your mind when you hear the word real estate? Security? Investment? White picket fences? Did you know that real estate is the single most sought-after asset on the planet? More people have accumulated wealth through real estate than by any other means. So whether you own property and want to cash in your equity, or simply want to take advantage of buying in this changing market, you need a qualified agent who understands market conditions and will listen to your needs. From Santa Cruz to Salinas, from Carmel to Big Sur, call me, Patty Ross, for a free consultation. I'm hardworking, experienced, and I care about you. Hey, forget the rest, get the best. Call me, Patty Ross. My heart's in it.
Contact Patty Ross at Keller Williams Realty in Carmel at 622-6235. That's 622-6235, or visit her website, pattyrosscarmel.com.
Seize the day and save money. That's the slogan of Stardate Solar, a company providing you with the highest quality solar power for your Monterey Bay Area home or business at the guaranteed lowest price. And that's the idea behind the Stardate Solar Power Hour. I'm your host, Dale Julin. Every Saturday at high noon, our nationally known cast of energy experts will tell you the latest news about the coming solar economy. And you'll also hear about the politics of solar power as well. The Stardate Solar Power Hour, Saturdays at noon and at stardatesolar.com.
I'm Scott Dick, the host of the Tasty Planet Show. Every Saturday from 1 to 4 p.m., I interview great guests, including national, regional, and local personalities that make our planet so delicious. And I want your feedback. It's simple. Go to www.tastyplanet.org, complete the survey, fill out a form, and you'll be automatically entered to win. That's all there is to it, and your info is safe with me. I won't use it for anything but this contest. So listen in on Saturdays from 1 to 4 p.m., and as Julia Child used to say, bon appétit!
Live from San Francisco, the Peter B. Collins Show, the antidote to right-wing talk radio. He's thoughtful, well-informed, and brings you views and voices you don't hear in the corporate media. Here's another slice of Peter B.'s America.
We continue now on the Peter B. Collins Show, reveling in the wisdom of Philadelphia's O.J. For the love of money, people will do anything.
Money.
Have you had enough of Paul Wolfowitz? Do you think it's time for him to step down as president of the World Bank and take his girlfriend into comfortable retirement with him?
Some people got to have it. Yeah, yeah. Some people really need it. Listen to me, y'all. Do things, do things, do things, bad things with it.
Joining us to talk about the man who spits on his comb before he applies it to his hair. It's always a beautiful scene. We have Michael Moore to thank for that. And a guy who, for some reason, often shows up at official public events with holes in his socks. Paul Wolfowitz, of course, was one of the neocon architects of the Project for a New American Century. He goes back with Richard Perle to the Reagan administration days. He's been on that neocon bus for a long time. And as a reward for his brilliant strategery in the invasion and occupation of Iraq, President Bush moved him over to the World Bank back there in about 2005, where he's been serving as president with a whole mission statement to clean up the mess there and to provide fiscal accountability for the poor nations that get on the dole with payday loans from the World Bank. Joining us to talk about this and give us a little more information is Samir Dosani. He is director of the organization called 50 Years is Enough, U.S. Network for Global Economic Justice. Their website is 50years50andtheword years.org. Samir, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Thanks for having me.
Well, it's our pleasure. And first of all, as we look at this whole scandal, did we need the girlfriend on the payroll and the ethics problems that these issues have presented to declare Paul Wolfowitz a failure as president of the World Bank?
Well, I think not. I mean, his whole agenda has been one of, you know, anti-corruption, as you said. Go in and stop the money that's being pocketed by these, you know, tin pot dictators or whatever he thinks. The fact is that he's been more than happy to increase aid to extremely corrupt countries like Pakistan, like Iraq, actually, which is at the top of the corruption index right now, as long as they sort of fit with the U.S. war on terror kind of agenda. When there are countries that are on the official enemies list, like Ecuador, then the corruption dealy has been used as an excuse to stop those aid flows altogether, the corruption policies.
Mm-hmm. And has he actually honestly dealt with any regimes that were, you know, siphoning off money from World Bank loans and cleaned it up so that the operation really benefits the citizens of those debtor nations?
Well, your question sort of assumes that that's what World Bank money is there to do. I mean, I talk about World Bank institutional corruption because, for me, corruption is when money comes between democratic decision-making processes, between citizens and between governments. And that's exactly what the World Bank does. The World Bank goes in with a pot of money and tells governments, you have to listen to us, not the people who put you into office.
Mm-hmm.
So in my view, everything that the World Bank does is corruption, and it needs to be gotten rid of altogether.
I can't dispute that. Well, let's go back to the origins. Originally, what was the purpose of the World Bank, and in your view, has it ever fulfilled that?
Well, the original purpose, no one thinks it fulfilled. It was founded in 1944 to rebuild Europe after the war, before the war was actually finished. And that ended up being done by the Marshall Plan, but then the World Bank decided to get into it. At those days, no one talked about poverty. No one talked about poverty alleviation. It was development financing. And the World Bank was a relatively small institution in the 1950s, and then in the 1960s, along comes another war criminal, Robert McNamara, and he figures out a way to generate tons and tons of money from the capital markets. And the World Bank grows into this huge bit of a monster. And if you're raising all this money, you need to get it out the door. So it becomes this huge cash cow sort of financing mechanism for huge mega projects, for huge dams, for huge roads. And it did that right up until about 1980. In 1980, the U.S. government goes to the World Bank and its sister organization, the IMF, and tells both of those institutions, look, we don't like the way the world is right now. We don't like these countries that are trying to be independent, or maybe they're going to go communist. Who knows what they're going to do? We want you to basically rewrite their economies. And they were able to use the oil crisis. All these countries were heavily in debt. They were able to use the debt that was a result of that 1970s oil crisis as a mechanism for imposing their own economic agenda, and that's what they do right up until today. And they started that around 1980.
Yeah. And the World Bank doesn't tolerate socialist governments. It basically tries to force market economics, Western style, on nations that may or may not have an affinity for it and the ability to really, you know, rebuild their economies.
Yeah, it's tricky here because they don't use the word socialist. They stay away from that, and they pretend that everything is they pretend economic logic is behind everything, right? So economic logic tells you to privatize your banks, your water systems, your school systems. Whatever's there has to be sold off to the highest bidder. Economic logic tells you to liberalize your markets. So there's no tariffs on stuff that comes in from outside, and there's no subsidies on things that you produce. And economic logic tells you basically that you have to cut social spending in every single turn. You can't have a big state. So it's basically, it's the Republican agenda from the 1980s. It's Reaganomics that these institutions have been pushing, and they've been using this. They don't use the word capitalist. They don't use the word socialist. They use the word, this is just economic theory.
Mm-hmm. Naomi Klein, who writes for The Nation and has published a few books in recent years, really, I think, focused properly on the way that Paul Bremer, who was we called him a viceroy or something like that.
But proconsul.
He was the head of the occupation, Iraq Occupation Authority. And he issued more than 100 decrees, many shortly before he jetted out of the country. And they tried to essentially just completely overhaul the economic structure in Iraq, not for the benefit of the Iraqi people, but to make it safe for American and other foreign capital to park there and extract the resources.
That's absolutely right. I mean, the book to read on that is actually Antonia Juhasz's. That's Juhasz.
Sure, we know Antonia.
Yeah, she's got a book called The Bush Agenda, Invading the World One Economy at a Time.
Mm-hmm.
And that really looks at these Bremer ordinances one at a time and sort of dissects them and figures out how exactly it was a gift to the rich. In some cases, it's not hard to figure that out. So they, you know, one of the Bremer ordinances is a flat tax, which just makes you want to laugh. I mean, imposing a flat tax in Iraq would be, well, I mean, I don't think you could actually do it. It would be pretty funny.
Yeah.
So it's all this, you know, I think the Bremer ordinances are really an interesting example of how these policies, you know, the sort of the military and the economic sort of linkages between, you know, we're in Iraq, but there's this whole economic agenda that's underlying that. And it's a gift to international business. It's a mm-hmm. huge gift.
Well, and a lot of people don't make the connection between Paul Bremer and Henry Kissinger, but Bremer has been a partner in Kissinger and Associates for a number of years now. And, of course, Kissinger, it's not a secret anymore, has been a major consultant to the Bush administration as it tries to figure out how the hell they got into this mess and what to do about it. And when you link Bremer, Kissinger, and Wolfowitz, and I'm not spinning conspiracies here, I'm just talking about the obvious relationships that they share and the ideas that they share. It, to me, underscores that Wolfowitz has been attempting to use the World Bank to advance the policy interests of the Bush administration, particularly in Iraq. And that's one of the reasons why when the girlfriend episode surfaced and his ethics were examined, that the different members who form the board of the World Bank have been pretty tough on him, and it appears that they are not going to let up. They continue to demand his resignation.
Well, that's right, and it's going from bad to worse for Wolfowitz, because we knew a few weeks ago that his girlfriend had been. Actually, there was another time when she worked for the State Department back in 2003 in the run-up to the Iraq War, and it just emerged yesterday that actually Wolfowitz wrote the memo commending her for that position. Mm-hmm. So it's not looking good.
Yeah.
I mean, and actually her job was to go and do pro-war propaganda. It's very interesting that someone who's getting paid by the World Bank goes and, you know, basically propagandizes in favor of the Iraq War in 2003.
And aside from that, what else do we know about Shaha Ali Riza?
Well, I mean, from everything we can make out of her, I mean, she's from the Middle East. She is a very powerful woman by all accounts. And from what we can make out, I mean, she very much shares the neoconservative agenda of remaking the Middle East to something that would be more favorable for the U.S. and for Israel. There's an interesting piece in the Washington Post yesterday she's clearly been trying to play the victim, and someone in the Washington Post staff decided to take that up. But we have a blog, worldbankpresident.org, and there's lots of people who know Shahar Riza who also are blogging there, and it's not she doesn't seem to have many friends, let's put it that way.
Well, I'm at that page right now, worldbankpresident.org, and it's kind of cute at the top. Who will be next? let me just click on this one link, more questions about Riza's secondment. And that secondment means that she was at the World Bank, and in order to establish an alleged arm's-length relationship, Wolfowitz had her employment transferred over to the State Department, where she was earning more than Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice. Strange things about Shahar Riza's time with the U.S. defense contractor SAIC in 2003. She took a leave from the bank, forfeited her bank salary. Sources have suggested she could have called what SAIC paid her expenses. She told her supervisor at the bank she was going on a trip to the Middle East as a volunteer. Consequently, she's in violation of bank regulations on outside interest/employment, and her G-4 visa status, foreign nationals aren't allowed to work for anyone other than their specified employer, in this case, the bank. She may have also been in violation of U.S. tax law. So that's all very interesting, and I haven't seen that in the corporate media.
No, I mean, what's interesting about that post is it basically says that the State Department sort of didn't okay this. This process that we've been told the whole time was kosher, and, you know, there was this secondment from the World Bank, meaning that she gets paid by the World Bank, but she's working at the State Department. At the last moment, the State Department said no, officially. So if the State Department said no, then what's she doing, actually? Who is she responsible for? I mean, who does she report to, rather?
Mm-hmm.
And if she doesn't report to anyone, then what exactly is she doing?
Well, and here's another entry that quotes David Korn of The Nation, a reliable source. In 2006, Riza goes to the Foundation for the Future, and it's not a U.S. government entity. It's received $35 million funding from the U.S., about $20 million in pledges from other governments. The board includes prominent citizens of Muslim nations, and Sandra Day O'Connor, the retired Supreme Court Justice, is the only American on the board. What does FFF do, and what the F was Riza doing working for them while she was drawing a salary from our State Department?
Well, this is very clear. I mean, we know exactly what Foundation for the Future is. It's part of a neocon dream of remaking the Middle East in a pro-corporate and a pro-private sector kind of a way. What we don't know is what it's actually done, because they haven't made any grants. They have a working website. They've apparently received $1 million from the British government, but they haven't actually done anything. And by all accounts, Riza doesn't spend a lot of time in the office. There's all kinds of unanswered questions here.
Well, she has to stay home to darn Paul's socks and help him with his hair.
Well, there you go. The other rumor is that they've broken up now, so I'm not sure if she's still doing that.
Oh, no. Wow. Maybe Wolfie will take up with Angelina Jolie or some Hollywood starlet. We'll take a break and return with Sameer Dosani. Go to the website 50years50years.org and check out his work at 50 Years is Enough, the U.S. Network for Global Economic Justice. If you have a question or a comment about Wolfowitz and his future, get on the line now, toll free at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. I'm Peter B. Collins.
You're listening to KRXA 540. Visit our website at krxa540.com.
This is Frank Don. On Sunday evenings at 7 p.m. here on KRXA 540 a.m., join me for Frank Don's Astrology Hour, a live call-in program to discuss astrology, the astrology of the world, and your own personal astrology. Let me answer your questions, and let me teach you how astrology can help you make better life choices. Here on KRXA 540 AM from 7 to 8 every Sunday evening, join me for Frank Don's Astrology Hour.
In these United States, you have many rights. You have rights to assemble.
You have the right to free speech in a free speech zone. You have the right to an attorney. You have the right to a speedy trial. Well, not if you're in Guantanamo. You have the right to privacy. No, wait. No, the FBI can read your mail and listen to your phone calls. America, where are your rights? Join Billy Sunshine, and we'll find them for you.
The Billy Sunshine Show, right here on KRXA 540 AM, Sundays 3 to 5.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
There's more than one side to every issue. Actually, there's usually more than two sides. It's important to get a different perspective on issues and current events, and that's what we'll provide you on Thursday nights at 10 on KRXA 540. Our show is called, appropriately enough, A Different Perspective. I'm Jack Quirk, and I'm your host. I have guests with a unique angle on current issues. I'm often joined by Phil Rapp and other guest co-hosts who bring their own expertise to our discussions. Join us each Thursday night at 10 for A Different Perspective, here on KRXA 540.
You're listening to The Peter B. Collins Show, produced in San Francisco by Katrina Rill. Brian Urban is our assistant producer, taking your calls today at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372, and you can email me, peter@peterbcollins.com. We continue with Samir Dosani. Again, his organization is 50 Years is Enough, and their website, 50years50years.org. And there are critics of the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund on both sides of the political spectrum. Is there common ground there, Samir? Or do the right-wingers, just make noises about dismantling it because ultimately it serves their capitalist friends?
Well, it's interesting here. I mean, I think we can distinguish between, a lot of times people from with my political bent talk about Democrats and Republicans being representing two sides of one corporate sort of spectrum. And the Democrats, I think, very much understand the use of these institutions for their own sort of for corporate ends, by and large. So Clinton was a big fan of the World Bank, and actually the World Bank did some pretty sketchy stuff in during Clinton's years, often with U.S. approval.
Mm-hmm.
Bush, on the other hand, and sort of the more right-wing little loony part of the Republican Party that he kind of represents, I don't think they really get it. I really don't. And I do think that they mean what they say when they say, we don't like multilateralism, we don't like the World Bank, we don't like the IMF. I don't think they understand the bang for the buck that they get with these institutions, which is really interesting. And so from time to time we have, I don't know if we've tried to form coalitions, but we've certainly, circulated statements from right-wing groups that have different arguments to essentially come to the same analysis that we do. In fact, just the other day I was on a live TV interview with someone from the Wall Street Journal's editorial board, and I was a little surprised because we ended up agreeing that the World Bank should go, but for very completely different reasons.
That's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I didn't know what to say. I mean, when you're agreeing with someone from the Wall Street Journal editorial board, assumably you're doing something wrong. So I couldn't quite figure out what I was doing wrong, but oh well.
Well, just examine your conscience, and I think you'll probably be okay. Let's take a call. Jake's on the line from Arcata. Hello, Jake. Welcome to the show today.
Hey, Peter B. I got a question. Other than old-fashioned Republican Party corruption and cronyism, What exactly was it that qualified Paul Wolfowitz to be head of the World Bank? I mean, here this guy, he used to work for the Nixon administration. He was an understudy of Henry Kissinger back then. And he got a job in the State Department for George Bush Sr. He wrote this thing called the Defense Policy Guidance Papers back in 1992. At the time, everybody thought this stuff was totally crazy. But as it turns out, the Project for the New American Century, which he was an architect of, was able to take these principles and put them into action once they were able to take over the Defense Department when George Bush Jr. became president. So what was crazy in 1992, Paul Wolfowitz and his theories, they became the policy of our country 10 years later. So what is it other than the fact that he has completely destroyed American foreign policy? What other than that qualifies him to be World Bank president?
What more does he need, Jake? Samir, go ahead.
Well, it's interesting because when he was pushed on this back in 2005, when he was being appointed to this post, the only thing his advisors, his spin doctors could come up with was that he had served as the ambassador to Indonesia in the 1980s, which is interesting because, of course, at that point, Indonesia had its own, corrupt dictator, Suharto, and by all accounts, he was pretty cozy with that dictator. So if that's the best he could do, he didn't really have anything.
So does that answer your question, Jake? I mean, like so many in the Bush administration, he was barely qualified for the work he was doing, and then they promoted him to something else.
Yeah, heck of a job, Brownie.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, Jake, thank you for checking in today. I appreciate that. Now, Samir, it appears that the board at the World Bank is ready to play Let's Make a Deal. And they've indicated that if Wolfowitz will get the hell out of there, they'll let Bush appoint his replacement. Now, explain, because as I understand it, under the policies and the procedures of the World Bank, it's a post that rotates between countries.
No, that's not accurate. I mean, no? this is not anything covered by the policies and procedures of the World Bank. This is something that dates back to a gentleman's agreement, quote-unquote, from 1944, whereby the U.S. government picks the head of the World Bank and the Europeans pick the head of the International Monetary Fund.
Oh, okay.
So there's never been a World Bank president who's not a U.S. citizen, and there's never been a World Bank president who wasn't just appointed. This election in 2005, because it was such a controversial figure, Paul Wolfowitz, we thought, oh, there's some hope for trying to get the Europeans or someone else to say this process has to go, but no such luck.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But let me just add to that the longer that this thing holds out, the better the chances that there'll actually be some real reform of that. Really, I mean, that process is corruption in and of itself.
Mm-hmm.
Why should two parts of the world, the U.S. and Europe, which represent what together represent maybe 20% of the world's population, maybe 15?
Mm-hmm.
Why should those two places get to decide all these things? Shouldn't there be a more democratic, more transparent, a more accountable process? And the longer Wolfowitz holds out, the more likely such reform can take place.
Mm-hmm. That's very interesting. Unintended consequence from his point of view. Now, I'm trying to recall one other thread, and that is that Douglas Feith, who was running the Office of Special Plans over there that cooked up the intelligence that they blame for leading us into the war, he had some role in approving the deal where Risa went to the Middle East in 2003. Is that right?
That's what we can make out. I mean, there's different, there's a really good NGO that's been getting these leaks. It's called the Global Accountability Project, and their website is whistleblower.org. And from some of the leaks that they've got, it looks like Feith is one of the people who's indicated. So it's interesting. It's interesting that there's this huge, there's a very, every level that you look at the Bush administration, it's just corruption on top of corruption. It's cronyism on top of everything else. So it's interesting that that all these figures are indicated.
Samir, what do we miss that you want to mention? We got about 30 seconds.
Oh, not much. It's going to be an interesting couple of days. I don't think he's long for this position. And we're hoping that, we're hoping that he stays as long as he can, because it's more likely that we can get some governance reforms. After he goes, we need to split up. I mean, the people who go after Wolfowitz need to go after him for war crimes, and people like me really need to stick on the World Bank and try and get some real meaningful reform there.
All right, sir. Well, it's a pleasure to meet you. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
Samir Dosani. Visit the website 5050years.org, and you can get more information. Coming up next, we're going to talk about tainted food. for pets, and is it creeping into the human food chain? Rick Perlstein will join us next for the campaign from the Campaign for America's Future.
Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand Avenue is your one stop on the Monterey Peninsula for fine wines, liquors, and beers at very reasonable prices. Let PG Liquors knowledgeable owner J.R. Medina and his son-in-law Chad help you choose the ideal Monterey regional or imported wine for any occasion, from an intimate dinner with that special someone to a formal affair with dozens or even hundreds of guests. If you're looking for distilled spirits, PG Liquors specializes in the finest blue agave tequilas, single malt and blended scotches, and top-shelf vodkas, including Northern California's own Hangar One. Beer lovers from Carmel to Marina, beat a path to PG Liquors, which boasts hundreds of handcrafted ales, lagers, stouts, porters, as well as all the big names. Make Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand, just above Lighthouse, the outlet for all of your beverage needs.
PG Liquors reminds you to always drink responsibly.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Spectacular wildfires on both coasts.
Southern California's sun-drenched getaway today remains in the grip of fire and smoke.
An American general north of Baghdad says he needs more troops. I'm Dan Ravitch.
This is the CBS World News Roundup, late edition. I'm Bill Whitney. The snap, crackle, and pop of a wildfire drowns out the surf on Santa Catalina Island just off the California coast.
4,000 acres burned so far. One home was destroyed and six structures were lost.
Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger. Firefighters have turned the flames away from the city of Avalon, but CBS News correspondent Bill Whitaker says the situation looked very dangerous for a while.
Authorities imposed a mandatory evacuation on much of Avalon. One house and several other structures have burned. More than 3,000 residents and tourists poured off ferries brought in to evacuate them to the mainland. Jane Lopez has lived on Catalina 15 years.
When we were leaving, the whole top area of the island was in big flames.
Like all of Southern California, Catalina is a tinderbox, suffering the driest year on record, only 2 inches of rain since January.
The fires burning in Georgia and Florida are spewing smoke for hundreds of miles. WFLA Radio Sharon Parker reports.
It looks like a dense fog, but it's a thick, gray blanket of smoke shrouding the Tampa Bay area. Smoke from wildfires around the state. National Weather Service forecaster Ryan Sharp says it's bad.
We've had more reports of ash actually covering cars in some places, and visibility is down less than 100 yards.
Schools in the area have canceled all outdoor activities. A low-pressure system skirting Florida's east coast has not brought any much-needed rain, but it is pushing that wildfire smoke across the state. Sharon Parker for CBS News, Tampa.
Now this.
Hi, Dave. It's Sarah. Hey, first thing tomorrow morning, a steel shelf on 12 is going to give way. You know, the one that stores all the toner. Yeah. Anyway, we'll give you a call when it breaks. Thanks.
In your job, you don't get warnings. So Grainger's just added a massive amount of shelving and storage products to help get you through whatever the day brings. We're adding products and removing problems. From shelves, bins, and cabinets to packaging, we have what you need to store just about anything. Call or visit your local branch or go online to Grainger.com. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If your car or truck is ready for new tires before your wallet is, hurry to your Ford or Lincoln Mercury dealership.
I can help. Take a tip for me.
Buy tires now and pay later with our genuine service credit card. Plus, bring in any competitor's current price ad on the name brand tires we sell within 30 days of purchase, and we'll beat that price, guaranteed. New tires, installed by four trained experts. Buy now and pay later. See your Ford or Lincoln Mercury dealership for details today. Offer ends June 30th.
The troop surge in Iraq is focused on securing Baghdad and Anbar province, but the third most dangerous place in Iraq is Diyala in the north, and an American general is publicly calling for reinforcements there. CBS News correspondent Dan Raviv talked to him today.
The commander of forces north of Baghdad tells CBS News he needs more troops, though Major General Benjamin Mixon says progress is being made in very violent Diyala province.
To complete the mission in a timely manner, additional forces are required, and we're working towards that end.
And what if Congress decides on a deadline to leave Iraq?
That decision would be detrimental to the security of the United States of America, in my opinion.
Mixon adding he's told that to visiting congressional delegations. Dan Revive, CBS News, Washington.
Iraqi President Jalal Talabani told students at Cambridge University in England today that his country will need U.S. and British troops for another year or two. While the immigration debate rages on, a group of senators who span the political spectrum has been meeting secretly with the Bush administration since March. CBS News Capitol Hill correspondent Cheryl Ackerson reports they've crafted a compromise proposal.
CBS News has been told the plan that could be announced next week attempts to please hardliners by spending billions to secure the border first. But all 12 million plus illegal immigrants could stay. They'd have to register and pay fines for having entered illegally. To become citizens, they'd go to the end of the line behind those who've already applied. Under a new merit plan, points would be given for work skills and language. The more points, the faster they can become citizens. And everyone, even U.S. citizens, would have to prove who they are when applying for a job.
Ranging in ideology from Democrat Ted Kennedy to Republican Lindsey Graham, the group believes this is the last opportunity to do something about immigration before the presidential election gets in the way. You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
If your car or truck is ready for new tires before your wallet is, hurry to your Ford or Lincoln Mercury dealership. Buy tires now and pay later with our genuine service credit card. Plus, bring in any competitor's current price ad on the name brand tires we sell within 30 days of purchase, and we'll beat that price, guaranteed. New tires, installed by four trained experts. Buy now and pay later. See your Ford or Lincoln Mercury dealership for details today. Offer ends June 30th.
Hey mama, happy Mother's Day. Let's take your worries all away. Give you a special Mother's Day. Let's go out back tonight.
Let go of where to go this Mother's Day. Go out back, where the pasta is bold, the steaks are juicy, the chicken tender. It's a nice way of saying thanks. No worries.
Let's go out back tonight.
This Mother's Day, let go.
Every day is Mother's Day.
Live, unscripted, and unrehearsed, of course. It's the unpredictable Peter B. Collins Show, originating from that dangerous liberal enclave, San Francisco. Call in anytime toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and add your voice to Peter B.'s America.
You found the Peter B. Collins Show, where we favor progressive politics and electric guitars. Still more to come on the PBC show today. Later this hour, we'll be joined by Shahid Mahmood. He is a Muslim cartoonist based in Toronto. And we're going to talk about the Hamas Mickey Mouse. His name is Farfour. He was canceled and then reinstated on TV in the Middle East this week. Don Imus would like to have his luck.
I've been driving all night, my hands wet on the wheel. There's a voice in my head that drives my heel.
And next hour, Brad Friedman in his regular weekly slot. His Bradness has quite a lot to talk about. Ann Coulter is in more hot water over her fraudulent election registration in Florida. Also, Brad has a powerful clip from the testimony, the commentary, the BS from Alberto Gonzalez before the House Judiciary Committee yesterday. And the House, I think it's the Administration Committee, where Rush Holt presides, has made some moves, one that pleases us and many others that don't. We'll talk about that coming up next hour. And
And we're having a little telephonic trouble right now. Brian is wrestling with the telephone, trying to reach our guest for this half hour, Rick Perlstein. You may know him as a writer of the Village Voice. He also published a powerful biography of Barry Goldwater a few years back. And he is now at the Campaign for America's Future, which is a great organization in Washington. They have the annual Take Back America conference, which we'll be attending and broadcasting live from in June. And we had its co-founder, Bob Borisage, on the show last week. He presided over that interesting debate between the gentleman from the American Progressive, or no, American, what is Prospect, that's what it's called, Kuttner, and Bill Kristol, the neocon publisher of Rupert Murdoch's funded Weekly Standard, and they do a lot of good work. And Rick Perlstein has just joined this organization, and he's very active on their website. He's got a blog going, and he has been paying close attention to the issues of our food supply. And as you know, this is quite a set of issues. Most recently, some 8,500 pets in the United States have been reported as dead victims of the tainted pet food coming in from China. And that's not the only issue. And Rick has very cleverly summed these different items up in this item that's at his blog, which is commonsense.ourfuture.org. And it's entitled E. coli Conservatives. And just for reference, this is a takeoff, if you will, on the very famous commentary of a Holocaust survivor, Pastor Martin Niemöller, who had he was also an anti-Nazi activist, who had written a piece that will ring in your ears as I read this updated commentary from Rick Perlstein. First, they came for the spinach. I remember the day last September. The supermarket had a new kind of salad dressing, one that looked like it would taste good with spinach. I went to the produce section to buy a bag, but they had all been recalled. Three people had died from E. coli contamination from eating spinach. I decided I could live without the spinach. Next, they came for the peanut butter, and I didn't pay much attention. I don't much like peanut butter. Well, there, Rick Perlstein and I disagree. I'm a daily peanut butter guy. He goes on. Then they came for the tomatoes. Then the Taco Bell lettuce. Then the mushrooms. Then ham steaks. Then summer sausage. I started worrying. Then they came for the pet food. And as you know, shipments of pet food from China have been reported to be tainted with a filler that was used just to bulk it up and, you know, stretch the actual food products in there. And we've seen quite a few problems develop here. Here's a story from yesterday, the Associated Press. China vowed on Wednesday to crack down on contaminated and sometimes deadly food and drugs after a string of sensational revelations about the safety of Chinese products. The campaign followed an announcement that authorities had detained managers from two companies linked to contaminated pet food that killed dogs and cats in the U.S. and Canada. State media in China, meanwhile, said the country's disgraced former top regulator of drugs would go on trial this month on charges of taking bribes to approve untested medicine. China faces criticism from the U.S. and European Union for what they contend are unfair trade practices, and tainted food scandals could lead to bans on food products that would put hard-pressed Chinese farmers under even greater strain. Already this year, Mississippi and Alabama have banned catfish from China after tests found ciprofloxacin and enrofloxacin, you can tell I'm real familiar with these antibiotics, banned for use in the United States. Louisiana officials said Monday they begin testing Chinese seafood for these antibiotics. China's government body responsible for overseeing food safety said that it had detained an unspecified number of managers from the Zhuzhou Anying Biologic Technology Development Company, and another company whose name is too long and hard to pronounce. And this came after the U.S. Food and Drug Administration cited the firms as the source of the pet food tainted with melamine, and that's a chemical used in plastics, fertilizers, and flame retardants. Inspectors said the tainted gluten was used to make pet food and caused the deaths of an unknown number of dogs and cats. The last number I saw in a news account 2 days ago was 8,500 dogs and cats in the United States have died as a result of this melamine, which was in the dog food products. And this, of course, has caused a wave of concern. I don't have pets myself, but dog and cat lovers who I know have been quizzing each other on what food is safe and what food isn't safe. And I think that's a whole interesting area to explore. So we have succeeded. Brian, congratulations. And we now have Rick Perlstein on the line. Hello, Rick. Welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hey, Peter. You tried my cell. I don't get very good reception in the house.
Oh, okay.
Well, sorry about that.
I'm glad we tracked you down. It's a pleasure to talk with you.
It's a pleasure to be on.
And how long have you been over there at the Campaign for America's Future?
It's been about, I'm about to reach my month anniversary.
Oh, great. So what do you get for that?
The month anniversary? I think that's the CoJam anniversary, isn't it?
I'm not exactly sure. So I was just updating my listeners on the latest in this flap over food safety, and in particular the tainted pet food that is blamed on the addition of a gluten called melamine in it's normally used in plastics and fertilizers and flame retardants. Doesn't sound like a compound that we want to ingest.
Sure, and it hasn't been a pet food scandal for a good 2 weeks now. It's, of course, a human food scandal.
Right. Well, we're moving in now to issues related to catfish, to other farmed fish in particular.
And it's even moved beyond, my friend, farmed fish. It's now in wild fish.
Really?
Yes, it's in the smolts, which is kind of the baby fish that they release into the wild, to breed with other fish. So, you know, people can't even just avoid farmed fish. They may have to be avoiding fish altogether.
So there's now, I'm sure, a handy melamine tester that we can take to the supermarket and within seconds identify whether a fish product or a pork product is safe for us?
If I guess we had a active Food and Drug Administration who was actually working for the public interest and not serving as a public relations agency for agribusiness, maybe we would, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, you're pointing up one of the critical issues that we saw surface with first the mad cow from Moses Lake. I think that's where it was up in Washington State back in 2005. You referenced, by the way, I read your blog piece about first they came for the spinach.
Yes.
Loved it.
Thanks. Yeah.
Beautifully written.
Did you see the URL for the blog, by the way?
I did. commonsense.ourfuture.org/e-coli-conservatives-thebigcon.
Right. Just to get to the blog, it's /thebigcon.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And you should know that we're on the air in Monterey, Salinas, Santa Cruz, California.
Oh, I wish I was there.
The area that was hard hit by the spinach E. coli outbreak. And the $25 million that Sam Farr got inserted in the Iraq supplemental got cut out during the conference. So the farmers and the community are still reeling from that episode. But what I wanted to point out is that the federal regulators do not have the authority to recall tainted products in most cases.
It's absolutely stunning. And to be clear, they've never, on the FDA end, they've never had that authority. Of course, the Food and Drug Administration started in 1906 after this book, The Jungle, came out by Upton Sinclair, in which he, you know, pointed out, you know, the way they were putting everything in pigs but the squeal, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of assumed that there would be kind of this 1-2 punch when it came to food safety. The FDA would do its bit, and the U.S. Department of Agriculture would do its bit, and it would be their job, basically, to have the authority to recall the food. But lo and behold, the USDA was captured by the agricultural industry, and that part never happened. So basically what we have is a voluntary system, and companies are recommended to recall their products, but they don't have to, and we don't know if they do, and we don't know if they don't.
Right.
And in the past few weeks, I've been on several conference calls for media with FDA officials, and they won't even tell the public who the companies are that receive these kind of tainted ingredients, even when they know. They'll only announce it after there's an illness and after there's a death. And that's why I call this entire doctrine E. coli conservatism, the idea that it's much more important to protect corporations than the public.
Yep. Agribusiness first, consumers second, third, fourth, if we're lucky. We're going to take a break and return with Rick Perlstein. And if you have a question or comment about the food supply and risks that you might face, give us a call now, toll free at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. I remain your humble host, and I love spinach, Peter B. Collins. KRXA 540, progressive talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Visit our website at krxa540.com.
Miguel Sarmiento, owner and chef of the Mexicali Grill in New Monterey, cordially invites you to visit his restaurant and enjoy quality Mexican food prepared with California seasonings and sauces, all with personalized, attentive service. Miguel has more than 14 years of experience preparing Italian, Hawaiian, Mexican, French, and American dishes in restaurants throughout Monterey County. Looking to savor the best Mexicali cuisine served with great margaritas or fine imported or domestic beers? Visit the Mexicali Grill today, located at 204 Lighthouse Avenue at the corner of Reeside Avenue in New Monterey. The Mexicali Grill is open daily for lunch from 11 to 3 and for dinner from 5 to 9. For takeout orders, call 375-9801. That's 375-9801. Miguel has a message for all Central Coast residents who appreciate delicious, high-quality Mexican food at reasonable prices.
Todos son bienvenidos en el Mexicali Grill. Try us. You'll like us a lot.
Carmel's community bookstore, The Pilgrim's Way, is a locally owned independent bookstore and has been for nearly 40 years.
Discover for yourself our intimate and unique setting, including the secret garden, known locally as a hidden treasure in downtown Carmel. Our friendly staff at Pilgrim's Way are available to assist you with any personal needs or gift buying. And our book selection offers the best of personal development, local interest, bestsellers, novels, children's, and metaphysical, plus much, much more. We have great music and healing tools, cards, and garden statuary.
Visit us at www.pilgrimsway.com or call 624-4955 or visit the Pilgrim's Way, Carmel's only bookstore, and the Secret Garden on Dolores Street between 5th and 6th in Carmel.
Have you thought about owning more real estate but don't know where to turn? Are you interested in learning how to make good profit buying and selling real estate? Or do you want to learn how to let your tenants pay the mortgage while you enjoy the equity? If you want to learn the ins and outs of real estate investing, listen to The Real Estate Guys, Sunday nights at 5 on KRXA. You can own more real estate. The Real Estate Guys will show you how. Listen Sunday nights at 5 and on the web at realestateguysradio.com.
Hi, Sheila Gale here with 12-Step Talk Uncensored, Addiction and Recovery Talk, Saturdays 4 to 5, now expanding to Wednesday evening 7 to 8. Taking shame and blame out of addiction, we take responsibility and treat it as the disease that it is. Great guests and great call-ins. Addictions, 12-Step Talk, it's about time. Now twice a week, Wednesday evening 7 to 8 and Saturdays 4 to 5. Brought to you by Sun Street Centers, building healthy lives in Monterey County. Sun Street for recovery and prevention.
All right, folks, it's Friday. Happy Friday, everybody. And let's give you the latest. We got a little problem in Watsonville. It's Johnson Drive at McGinnis. It's a vehicle that hit a house. Fire department rescue crews are on scene. Don't have any reports of any injuries at this point, but certainly we're going to keep you advised about this situation. And a sticky situation in Salinas. A little bit of tire tread in the lanes. It's northbound 101 at Main. If you are in Marina, Highway 1 northbound right at 8th Street, we have a garbage can that is in one of the lanes there. Other than that, no other problems to report in Salinas, Monterey, or Santa Cruz, which is always good news to report. All right, this report is brought to you by NBC 11 News at 5. Men have Viagra. Now there's an answer for women. Discover the new secret formulas doctors can't keep in stock today on NBC 11 at 5, followed by NBC Nightly News with Brian Williams. That's traffic on KRXA.
There was E. coli in my spinach, some foreign object in my peanut butter. Then there was melamine in my pet food. Now there's melamine in my catfish. And in the other chicken, pork, too? I mean, what's safe anymore? Next thing you know, you'll be fixing the rat for dinner because it's safer than what you can find at the supermarket. That's UB40. I'm Peter B. Collins, and he be Rick Perlstein. And, Rick, is there anything safe? I got some really juicy lamb chops I was planning to throw on the Barbie tonight. Do you advise against that?
Well, I can't really say, and the FDA can't really say, because every time they say something safe, they come around the next day and say, oops, we were wrong. And, I hadn't intended to get into this line of work. I hadn't intended when I started my blog, The Big Con, to study food safety. It's a blog about conservatism. And conservatism is the name of the ideology that gives us, you know, these poison spinach, this poison lamb, if that be the next down the line. It's this ideology that government is inherently evil. You know, I just got a letter from one of the Republican presidential campaigns, a fundraising letter.
Mm-hmm.
First paragraph. I want you to know that as President of the United States, I will fight to cut taxes, keep them low, and allow you to keep more of the money you earn, period. That's a pledge you can bank on. I believe to my very core that you, your family, and every American has the right to keep as much of your hard earned income as possible. You know, he might as well just say, I'm not going to protect you from things you can't protect yourself against.
Mm-hmm.
It's stunning that we've come to this pass, that the idea of cutting taxes and keeping them low is seen as the only civic virtue. What kind of madness is that?
Now, are we thinning the herd?
Are we thinning the herd? in a Darwinist sense?
Yeah.
Well, you leave me without words to say. Peter. I hope not. I mean, I know that there are a lot of conservatives out there who love the idea of demonstrating that government can't work,
mm-hmm.
because then that they love the idea of government failing, because then that fits their ideology that government can't work. But I would like to think that they're not that cynical.
Well, but Katrina took us from benign neglect to this kind of active alienation of groups of people who are considered, well, just not that important to the neocons.
Well, you know, we're not thinning it anymore. I mean, things are really turning around in this country. There was an absolutely stunning, stunning poll that came out from the Pew Polling Organization,
mm-hmm.
in which they track what people say about things like whether they're willing to pay higher taxes or not to increase inequality, whether they're willing to pay higher taxes or not to make sure that every American has a roof over their head, or a roof is what we call it here in the Midwest. You might call it a roof. whether every American can be guaranteed health care. And the numbers of people who are willing to act in their civic function and be patriotic Americans and protect their fellow Americans from harm is really at its highest rate as it has been in 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
So if we were thinning the herd, over the last 6 years when we turned all three branches of government over to the conservatives, you know, we're not anymore. We're heading in the right direction. You know, we still have to keep the pressure on our elected representatives. The Senate just passed what could be a very potentially powerful bill that will force the FDA
mm-hmm.
to recall drugs that are dangerous. But it's going to the House right now, and there's plenty that needs to be done to make this a good, solid bill. For example, the drug companies now kick in 20% of the money that goes to evaluating the safety of their own products.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem with that is they basically get to control 20% of the process of the safety of their own products.
Mm-hmm.
And so it would be great if people could get on the phone to their representatives in the House and say, look, I want you to strengthen this bill. I want you to take away what they call user fees, which is, you know, the system where basically companies pay to regulate themselves.
Right.
And, you know, maybe we can get a strong bill out of Congress.
Yeah.
Things are changing. It's a very good time to be a progressive.
And if you have some OxyContin,
fighting the good fight.
If you have some OxyContin, hold on to it. It might be outlawed soon. Rick Perlstein, thanks for joining us today.
It's a pleasure, Peter.
Nice to talk with you.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Dedicated to the proposition that fun, learning, and personal growth go together perfectly, Thinker Toys, with two beautiful stores on the Monterey Peninsula, has an incredible selection of fun and educational toys, games, books, and art supplies for infants to teens. For nearly 40 years, Thinker Toys owner Mark Phillips and his experienced staff have been serving the parents and children of the Central Coast. They can help you choose the perfect gift for the special child in your life. Join Thinker Toys' three generations of satisfied customers, and you'll see why Thinker Toys is the most fun place to shop on the Monterey Peninsula. Open every day. Thinker Toys is at the corner of San Carlos and 7th in Carmel by the Sea, and next to Starbucks in the Del Monte Center in Monterey. You can also order by phone, 831-624-0441. That's 624-0441. Or browse at thinkertoys.com.
Drug maker find, America safe again. This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network. In the last 11 years, OxyContin has become the nation's most popular prescription painkiller and a pretty popular non-prescription painkiller. And now we know why. OxyContin is one of mankind's many attempts to come up with something that kills pain like heroin without being addictive and deadly. But it's been obvious for some time now that OxyContin is addictive and deadly and that the company lied about it. Guess they figured that if big tobacco got away with it for 40 years, they could too. Well, they didn't. They have to pay $634 million. But in a way, they did. Because just as the tobacco industry gets to keep selling nicotine, Purdue Pharma gets to keep selling OxyContin, albeit only for prescription use. And the reason is that it has a legitimate medicinal use. It kills pain really, really well for just $9 a pill. There have been attempts to ban it, but they've gone nowhere because if you suffer from chronic pain, there's no legal drug like it. Plenty of illegal ones, of course. In fact, people with grow operations in the basement must be going crazy, wondering what they've been doing wrong here. Poppy growers in Afghanistan must be wondering, what the heck? We can kill pain way cheaper. I don't know what to say to you, except change a few molecules, pick a cool-sounding name, incorporate yourselves as a pharmaceutical company, and start making campaign contributions. You'd make almost as much money. You wouldn't have to hire those unreliable small planes. You wouldn't need so many guns. And you wouldn't have to be in bed with groups like the Taliban. Just the Democrats and the Republicans. Now this.
Yeah, well, it's a pretty good job, innit, when you think about it? I mean, basically, I help people save money, don't I? Like, I tell people they can save hundreds by switching to Geico. They go to geico.com, maybe save all this money on car insurance, and the next thing you know, I'm, like, invited to their wedding or whatever. One bloke actually asked me to be his best man. Dear, oh dear. Point is, if you want loads of friends, giving away money, it's not a bad idea.
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network.
If you have a hard time losing weight, especially stubborn fat around the hips, thighs, and stomach, you need Affinity's Lose and Snooze. You can actually lose weight even while you sleep. The advanced Lose and Snooze formula in combination with the one-day diet plan will accelerate your weight loss dramatically. Lose and Snooze with natural ingredients is scientifically designed to help you lose up to 20 pounds a month while still eating your favorite foods. Start reshaping your body. Fit into that new wardrobe and lose those stubborn pounds safe and fast, even while you sleep. Try Lose and Snooze risk-free today. Buy two bottles of Lose and Snooze and you'll get a free supply of the one-day diet. If you are not completely satisfied with your weight loss within 30 days, simply send back any unused portion for a full refund of your purchase price. No questions asked. So start taking off those stubborn pounds today, even while you sleep. Call right now, 1-800-985-3668. That's 1-800-985-3668. Call now.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. He's smart, funny, well-informed, opinionated, and mild-mannered, except when he's not. Welcome to Peter B.'s America.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. Coming up next hour, his Bradness, Brad Friedman, returns for a weekly Bradcast. Ann Coulter is in his sight. And that's not all. We'll take on Alberto Gonzalez, too.
People moving out, people moving in. Why? Because of the color of the skin.
Run, 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 but you sure can't hide.
And I, boy, and I, a tooth for a tooth. Vote for me, and I'll set you free. Rap on, brother, rap on. Well, the only person talking about love now, brother, is the preacher. Teacher. Segregation, determination, demonstration, integration, aggravation, humiliation, obligation to my nation.
Well, frankly, I am a little bit confused because this week we learned about a cartoon character on television in the Middle East on the Al-Aqsa channel, which is controlled by Hamas, or at least related to that political group in Palestine. And this cartoon critter is named Farfour. And on Wednesday, they announced that the militant Mickey Mouse had been pulled off the air. And today, they announced that he is back on the air. And I'm sure that Don Imus would like to pull a stunt like that. Come on, Porky, spit it out.
That's all, folks.
Joining us to talk about it is Shahid Mahmood. He is a cartoonist based in Toronto. He is Pakistani originally, grew up there in General Zia's era, and he started drawing for Karachi's evening newspaper at the age of 15. Welcome to our program, Shahid.
Hi, Peter. How are you?
I'm fine, and I am glad to talk with you again. We had a conversation, gosh, a year, year and a half ago, about the Danish cartoons of the Prophet Muhammad.
That's right. I guess it's whenever a cartoon comes up into the public realm.
You're the toon specialist.
Thanks.
So have you had a chance to watch actual complete segments of this show that features Farfour?
Well, I've seen segments. And, I mean, I find that it's a little bit intriguing in the sense that Mickey, as a cartoon, has been infused with sort of political content. I mean, barring all the sort of the malintentions, I find it very ironic. It's very interesting, actually, from a cartoonist point of view.
Mm-hmm. Well, go on about that. Do you consider it interesting that they would take an American corporate icon and convert him to their uses?
Yeah, it's very sort of subversive in a way. And it's also very telling. I mean, when you look at elements of satire, you know, successful pieces of satire usually take something iconic and they subvert them.
Mm-hmm.
And Mickey is, it's sort of, it was a character up for grabs in the sense that, what is, you know, I ask you, what does Mickey stand for presently? It's really sort of devoid of any sort of political content or social energy that you may sort of think of in a cartoon. Because usually cartoons, at least historically, have always started off as being elements with a sort of social satire slant to them.
Mm-hmm.
Mickey, on the other hand, is just there for people to laugh at. I sort of look at Mickey as being a Trojan horse of sorts, where you can really imbibe it with all sorts of characteristics. And, you know, that's why it sort of is very popular in many different countries, you know, starting from Japan to the UK to North America. And what they've done in the Middle East is sort of imbibe it with a sort of a character that is indicative of their sort of struggles or their sort of sort of extremists using agendas to sort of twist people's minds. It's a very sort of bizarre way of using an icon like that, but very subversive.
Mm-hmm. And what messages is Farfour delivering to children in that part of the world?
Well, you know, I think the message itself is unfortunately, you know, it's sad. I mean, it's sad that, you know, children need to be politicized like that. You know, it's sad that, you know, the situation in the Middle East is such that people have to identify with these issues that are really sort of, you know, extremist in view and sort of are necessitating people to take actions like, you know, kill themselves, suicide bombing, unrest, sort of not open and peaceful dialogue. So, I mean, that's the sort of the sad aspect of this. And, you know, I even think the Palestinian Information Minister, Mustafa Barghouti, said that this was a mistaken approach. But however, I think the station manager said that they're just going to continue with using Mickey Mouse.
Yeah. Well, I have two stories in front of me. One is dated Wednesday, and the other is from today, Friday. Mm-hmm. And on Wednesday, the headline read, Militant Mickey Mouse Pulled Off Air.
Mm-hmm.
And today it reads, Mickey Mouse Lookalike Back on Hamas TV.
Mm-hmm.
And they quote the station manager there at Al-Aqsa Television, Hazem Al-Sharawi,
mm-hmm.
saying that the show called Tomorrow's Pioneers has an educational message and will not be canceled.
Well, see, you know, depending on who your broadcaster is and who your sort of what your target audience is for the program, you know, they can say whatever they want. And, you know, this is sort of how the media really sort of channels itself into its households and into its target audiences is that they can say that, you know, this is who our audience is and this is who and why we're doing what we're doing. And, you know, the lead character is Mickey Mouse, or I think they're calling him in Arabic Farfour, which means butterfly.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's this character which has been sort of... It's interesting that they use butterfly as well because, you know, the butterfly goes through a certain metamorphosis. You know,
right.
It goes from a caterpillar to a pupa to a butterfly.
Mm-hmm.
And it sort of kind of speaks of the metamorphosis of Mickey Mouse, where, you know, the Mickey Mouse of the corporate North American entity has now become a spokesperson for Hamas, which is becoming, you know, talking about things of, you know, destroying Jerusalem and getting rid of the Jews in mm-hmm. the occupied territory. I mean, it's a twisted message, and it's something that, you know, I guess that this audience is being tapped into by mm-hmm. by the producers.
So the AP story here reads, the lead character is called Farfour, or Butterfly in Arabic, as you said, but is an unmistakable copy of the Disney character, Mickey Mouse. On mm-hmm. Friday, the character said he cheated on his exams because, quote, the Jews destroyed my house, and he lost his books under the rubble.
Mm-hmm.
Children called in telling him his behavior was un-Islamic.
Mm-hmm.
On previous episodes, Farfour said, you and I are laying the foundation for a world led by Islamists.
Mm-hmm.
We will return the Islamic community to its former greatness and liberate Jerusalem, God willing, liberate Iraq, God willing, and liberate all the countries of the Muslims invaded by the murderers. So that's a fairly adult concept to propagandize to children with a cartoon character.
Well, see, this is the thing, and this is the thing that is absolutely abhorrent about any form of extremism, is that they really sort of corrupt your sense of ethics, your morality, your sense of what is right and what is good. You know, children are sort of innocent sort of pawns in the hands of these extremists, and we've seen how these extremists use children. You know, they promise children who have had families, broken families that have been faced with death and destruction, and they say that, you know, if you join our cause, you will be guaranteed sort of liberation in heaven.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this is absolutely wrong. Instead of, you know, going there and helping the community sort of, you know, pick up itself, provide social services, provide education, provide social aspects to their communities in which they can sort of grow, they incite violence, and this is absolutely wrong. And, you know, I think what the producer at one point said is that, you know, we don't incite intolerance or violence. You know, we just present a set of facts and reality. Sure, you may present a set of facts, but the facts are this, is that, you know, the community needs help.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the basic line. It needs help to sort of pick itself up, to have an urban infrastructure. It needs running water. They need sort of inoculations. They need medicine. They need education, social services. That's what they don't have.
Mm-hmm.
But then to say that, you know, this is all the cause of Israel, or this is all the cause of, occupying armies, you know, there might be a germ of truth in that, but then in the end, they themselves are the people who have to pick themselves up and sort of move forward. They can't sort of incite and use sort of iconic images to sort of incite kids. I mean, they're probably realizing that, you know, they themselves can't do anything anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Now what do they have to do?
Now, Shahid Mahmood, to your knowledge, does Al-Hura, which is the U.S.-backed propaganda instrument in the Middle East, it's called the Free One, that's a television channel that is beamed by satellite to many nations, and there's also a radio service with American pop music.
Mm-hmm.
Is it any better? I mean, I'm not suggesting that the U.S.-backed channel, although I have no actual first-hand knowledge, would misuse a cartoon character for propaganda purposes. But the whole idea of Al-Hura is paid propaganda to promote the U.S. point of view. So where do we draw the line as to, you know, what is appropriate and what is inappropriate?
Well, see, this is the thing. I mean, when I'm sitting here being critical of the use of Mickey Mouse, that's not to say that the West itself uses cartoon characters or local imagery for their benefit, you know?
Well, I'm thinking of Joe Camel, which was the cartoon character developed by the cigarette industry to get teenagers to think that Camels are cool cigarettes.
Exactly.
And you know, that's a predatory approach. It's not intended to encourage people to take up a culture of death, but it is to encourage them to take up a habit that will kill them.
And that's the thing. Like, you know, why do you, you know, the Camel cigarette is a very sort of interesting idea as well. Like, you take something like a camel, you dress him up, you put a pair of shades on him, he's standing in front of, like, a Corvette and with, like, voluptuous women sitting in the car, and all of a sudden sort of becomes cool. And, you know, Mickey Mouse is a character that is, I mean, you would be hard-pressed to find anybody in the world who does not know who Mickey Mouse is. You know, there's... I mean, you can go to Pakistan and to the hinterland and present a picture of Mickey Mouse, and somebody will know it. And, you know, historically, cartoons have always been used for some sort of political agenda, Mickey Mouse included. Historically, I mean, if you've seen his development, or even Bugs Bunny, you know, they've been used sort of to propagate certain views in, you know, World War II, Prohibition, I mean, you name it, they've been there, and
mm-hmm.
they've been sort of spokespeople or spokesimages for these causes.
Well, back there on Rocky and Bullwinkle, they had the Boris and Natasha characters
mm-hmm.
during the Cold War used to ridicule the the Soviets, and mm-hmm. It was pretty effective.
Yeah.
I mean,
throughout history, cartoons have been employed by the media, by satirists, by journals, and you know that's why you know people like myself are employed to a degree that you know you can draw a cartoon and put it in the newspaper and people look at it because
yeah.
you know the picture does depict an image does depict certain subtleties that perhaps could be harder to do with words.
Right. And I'm looking at one of your cartoons online right now. We'll talk about it after a break. We're talking with Shahid Mahmood. He is a Muslim cartoonist based in Toronto. And you can call in if you have a question or comment. Toll free at 888-5-PETER-B. 888-573-8372 puts you through to the Peter B. Collins Show.
If you like people who talk funny, listen to Stephanie Miller in the morning on AM 540 KRXA. Ha!
In response to rising interest rates, Victor Munoz of Creative Mortgage in Salinas offers the following advice to homeowners with variable rate loans. Don't panic or overreact. If you feel trapped in a frightening squeeze, first analyze your situation calmly, then take the best action available. There are so many types of loans, one is very likely to meet your particular needs. For a free consultation with Victor Munoz at Creative Mortgage, call 757-0436. Let Victor share with you the knowledge that he has built up over many years in the mortgage industry. Call Victor at 757-0436 today.
Doing business in Santa Cruz County since 1950, Wilson's Tire and Service now has three locations to serve you better wherever you live. All three locations feature full service, friendly, fast, same-day service, or, in the words of hands-on owner Juan Escamilla,
we're fast and fair, and service is job one at Wilson's Tire and Service.
Specializing in tire, brake, and alignment services with state-of-the-art equipment. Looking for friendly, fast, same-day service from experienced pros? Come to Wilson's Tire and Service. Now located in Santa Cruz at 1807 Soquel Avenue across from Walgreens, in Soquel Village at Old San Jose Road and Soquel Drive, and now in Aptos Village across the entrance to Nicene Mark State Park. Questions? Call 476-0370. That's 476-0370. Say hello to Juan and get the Wilson's Tire and Service, full service.
Hi, Ed Schultz here. Starting May 14th, the Ed Schultz Show moves to 9 a.m. to noon right here on KRXA 540. So join us for the best in talk radio, news, commentary, and your calls. If it's happening in America, it'll be on the Ed Schultz Show, 9 a.m. to noon, starting May 14th, right here on AM 540 KRXA.
All right, everybody, let's take a look at traffic and make sure we get you caught up to date. Happy Friday, if I might add. Well, really, no major stalls or accidents to report. So what does that mean? It means we're going to tell you a little bit about some slow traffic. Southbound Highway 1 is a little bit slow and go right now between Monterey and Carmel. It appears that we do have some slow traffic southbound 17 from 85 to the Lexington Reservoir. Again, mostly slow from the summit into Santa Cruz and onto Highway 1 because of this problem there. Of course, a lot of folks getting out of town or heading to the Santa Cruz or Monterey area at this point. This report is brought to you by NBC 11 at 5. Men have Viagra, now there's an answer for women. Discover the secret formula doctors can't keep in stock today on NBC 11 News, followed by NBC Nightly News with Brian Williams.
And the Peter B. Collins Show continues. It's 4:52 here on the left coast. We're talking with Shahid Mahmood, a cartoonist who is based in Toronto, about the story that broke this week about the character called Farfour, who is a cartoon character, very much an imitation of Mickey Mouse, who has been appearing on a television show on the Hamas-controlled Al-Aqsa television channel in the Middle East, and it's on a show that airs on Fridays called Tomorrow's Pioneers. And as we were going to the break, we were talking about the way cartoons have been used over the years for corporate propaganda and political propaganda, and they've been extremely effective. Where do you feel that this character crosses a line into new territory, Shahid?
I don't think, actually, Peter, it really crosses into any new line. For me, you know, when you draw a cartoon, for instance, you you have to sort of draw on sort of on a consciousness of the people in order for them to understand concepts that you are trying to represent. You don't have necessarily the luxury of words where you can kind of build up a preamble or sort of state something in your body and then come to some conclusion. You have to sort of put all of that together in an image. And when you do that, especially when you're sort of dealing with satire, you have to deal with imagery that is recognizable, or, you know, when it becomes more powerful, it becomes more iconic. I've used personally myself the image of Mickey Mouse, obviously not for the purposes of what is being done in the Middle East, but when you sort of, you know, think of, when you're trying to depict something like a corporate entity, the thing that comes to your mind is Mickey Mouse.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Mickey Mouse itself is also sort of, you know, if you look at it, the pejorative use of Mickey's name is, you know, you can think of it as a slang expression, which means, you know, tiny or small time, amateurish, you know, like it's a Mickey Mouse deal, meaning, you know, it's not a very big deal. So
right.
Even in the United States, protest votes. I mean, the moment you sort of want to put down or highlight sort of an inadequate ballot, you put down Mickey Mouse or Donald Duck or Bugs Bunny. I mean, these sort of express the sort of the triviality of what you're trying to portray mm-hmm. on your ballot sheet. So, you know, there's a lot of sort of meaning that has become sort of attached to Mickey Mouse. And, you know, I think it sort of transcends the use of why are they using Mickey Mouse. It's just for them, you know, if an extremist organization wants to sort of get a point across, Mickey Mouse is just sort of a very sort of available icon for them to utilize.
Mm-hmm.
And people can then sort of make that connection.
Now, Shahid, I went to a website called CanadianCartoonists.com mm-hmm. and found a cartoon of yours. Is that the best place for our listeners to go? Do you have a website of your own?
I actually do have a website, but I think it's under progress. It's being updated and sort of revamped. And
I see.
It's called drawnconclusions.com. But I think if you sort of type in my name with cartoonist at the end, it should pull up a selection on Google.
Well, it's interesting. Under your name, there's a guy who has his resume up who appears to be an engineer of some sort. there's a doctor in Pakistan. So.
I think you would have to sort of go plus cartoonist.
Yeah, that's a good idea. So I'm looking at one. It's called The Rape of Afghanistan, and this is a very powerful cartoon.
Uh-huh.
You're showing essentially a woman who is, I guess, recovering from a forced sex act. Uncle Sam's belt is unbuckled. His pants are partly down. And he is holding what appears to be a used condom with the word Pakistan on it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that is very powerful and probably offensive to some people. Mm-hmm. But I get the message, and it is it's quite graphic.
Yeah.
And is that a pack of Camel cigarettes on the floor next to the victim there, or is that the condom wrapper?
It might be both.
Okay. It's just a little, you know, cigarette-sized box with the letter C on it, so.
Yeah. See, again, for me, you know, when I distinguish between American foreign policy within my cartoons, I mean, the most common icon that is there available for me to sort of use and then to sort of impress upon the readers who sort of look at my cartoons is Uncle Sam. I mean, there is no other better sort of iconic image for me to use.
Well, there's this one of Bush holding the World Atlas upside down.
Well, then you sort of have to get into, you know, drawing world leaders, and sometimes it's a lot easier just to draw like this, you know, this sort of older genteel man with a sort of a white beard
to right.
actually sit there and draw George Bush.
But, mm-hmm.
You know, obviously when you're sort of talking about sort of more of a sort of a foreign policy, for instance, what did happen in Afghanistan. And, you know, I grew up in Pakistan. I live in Canada now, but, you know, I grew up in Pakistan at a time when, you know, the Soviets had invaded Afghanistan. and the American administration at the time was very much involved in Afghanistan, helping the Mujahideen fight back the Soviets. And, you know, post-September 11th, this has now become sort of a very sort of common knowledge piece of, very common common knowledge is that, you know, the same Mujahideen are now, you know, on the other side of the fence.
Yeah. I gotta run here. I want to thank you for joining us, Shahid Mahmood, and visit the website drawnconclusions.com. See it for yourself. Thank you.
Make this Mother's Day special. Treat mom to a delicious slice of Mexico at La Flor de Oaxaca, Carmel's only Mexican restaurant. Delight your senses and your palate in particular. Discover La Flor de Oaxaca this Mother's Day and meet chef owner Conrado Geronimo. La Flor de Oaxaca is located at the southwest corner of Dolores at 5th in Carmel by the Sea and is normally open Monday through Saturday for lunch and dinner from 11 to 9. And this Sunday, May 13th, Mother's Day, they'll be open from 4:30 to 9. Mom will love enchiladas San Felipe's or enchiladas verdes with a wine from the house list. La Flor de Oaxaca's mission is to serve you the best Mexican cuisine with an emphasis on the unique and delicious flavors of Oaxaca. La Flor de Oaxaca will be open this Sunday, Mother's Day. Make Mom's Day extra special with delicious Mexican food and live marimba music at La Flor de Oaxaca from 4:30 to 9. Don't miss the fun and delicious food.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. By air, by sea, and on the ground, firefighters are battling the flames that have already consumed 4,000 acres on California's Santa Catalina Island. Planes and helicopters are dumping water, and CBS News correspondent Bill Whitaker says ferries are delivering reinforcements from the mainland.
The same boats that brought families off Catalina transported mainland firefighters to the inferno. Marines from nearby Camp Pendleton provided giant hovercraft to ferry in trucks and equipment.
Among the evacuees is Mark Oliver, a visitor from La Jolla.
It was like being in Vietnam and having the helicopters fly back and forth every minute, and tankers dropping water, and just smoke and ash, and heavy ash.
Heavy smoke from fires in the southeast is creating environmental problems. CBS News correspondent Kelly Cobier reports from north central Florida.
We're just on the edge of Lake City here near Interstate 10, and it is incredibly smoky. I've been out here all day long. My eyes are starting to burn. The smell of smoke you just can't get away from. It looks like it's a really overcast, cloudy day. We haven't seen the sun all day, but that's pure smoke.
There's a third area of fire in northern Minnesota along the Canadian border. Conditions are terrible, says Cook County Commissioner Bob Fenwick.
It's very rugged. There's no easy slopes that you would see like in mountain-type fires. It's all up and down and up and down. The wind swirls in here rather than goes in a straight line. It's a very difficult situation.
The fire spreads over 86 square miles. It's the old game of whack-a-mole in Iraq. While U.S. forces concentrate on Baghdad and Anbar province, things are heating up in the north. The commander there, Major General Benjamin Mixon, says he needs help.
We do need additional coalition forces in Diyala province. Lieutenant General Odierno, my boss, will provide those forces when the timing is right.
U.S. casualties in the area are up. General Mixon says that's because they're on the offensive and because more militants have moved in. Quiet negotiations between a group of senators and the White House might produce a compromise on immigration. CBS News Capitol Hill correspondent Cheryl Atkinson got wind of this.
With protesters taking to the streets and Americans looking to Washington for a solution, never before has immigration reform been tackled this way. Politicians at opposite ends of the debate collaborating in secret to devise a new comprehensive plan. The group, including Senators Ted Kennedy and Lindsey Graham, has met for hours several times a week since March.
What they've come up with is a plan to spend billions securing the borders. Then the people already here illegally would be allowed to stay, but they'd have to register and pay fines for entering the country. They'd go to the back of the line when applying for citizenship. On Wall Street, the Dow up 111 points to close at 13,326. This is CBS News.
Welcome to Lardo's.
Yeah, can I get an order of spare tires?
Yeah, what size? Plump, chubby, or incredibly huge?
How about incredibly huge?
You want love handles with that?
Oh, yeah.
What are you really getting in your combo meal? The new Subway Fresh Fit Meals fit into the American Heart Association's approach to a healthy lifestyle. Tasty, low-fat subs, better-for-you sides, and a drink. Subway, eat fresh.
Fat content refers to regular 6-inch sub on white or wheat bread without condiments that contain fat. See store for additional nutritional information, including sodium content. Products may vary. Subway is a registered trademark of Doctors Associates, Inc.
Just imagine what you can accomplish today. You can start your own company. You can paint a portrait or cook a gourmet meal or just be yourself. Every day, we're free to accomplish all kinds of fascinating things. And for generations, the people of Sitco have been providing energy for our achievements, big and small. With access to the largest crude reserves in the Western Hemisphere, the people of Sitco are here to help fuel our way of life. Sitco, there at every turn.
There's a partial recall of Chrysler minivans. Jeff Gilbert of Detroit station WWJ explains.
Since the problem is caused by corrosion, it's only a recall in states that use a lot of road salt. In other states, Chrysler spokesman Max Gates says they are simply extending the warranty. The problem is with the backup airbag and corrode.
The airbag will still work if the system corrodes and is not functioning properly. But the airbag warning light comes on, and we need to make sure that this backup system is functioning properly.
Owners of the affected 2005 Chrysler Town & Countries and Dodge Caravans will be notified by mail. Jeff Gilbert, CBS News, Detroit.
When a silvery metallic object crashed through the roof of a house in New Jersey back in January, the consensus was it was a meteorite. But a Rutgers University geologist took it back to the lab and, after some analysis, concluded it's a piece of space junk, part of a rocket or a satellite or some other spacecraft. No one was hurt when it came back to Earth, but the heavy hunk cracked the bathroom tile. I'm Bill Whitney, CBS News.
Hi, Dave. It's Sarah. Hey, first thing tomorrow morning, a steel shelf on 12 is going to give way. You know, the one that stores all the toner. Yeah. Anyway, we'll give you a call when it breaks. Thanks.
In your job, you don't get warnings, so Grainger's just added a massive amount of shelving and storage products to help get you through whatever the day brings. We're adding products and removing problems. From shelves, bins, and cabinets to packaging, we have what you need to store just about anything. Call or visit your local branch or go online to Grainger.com. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If your car or truck is ready for new tires before your wallet is, hurry to your Ford or Lincoln Mercury dealership.
I can help. Take a tip for me.
Buy tires now and pay later with our genuine service credit card. Plus, bring in any competitor's current price ad on the name brand tires we sell within 30 days of purchase, and we'll beat that price, guaranteed. New tires, installed by four trained experts. Buy now and pay later. See your Ford or Lincoln Mercury dealership for details today. Offer ends June 30th.
Live from San Francisco, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. Lively, informative, compelling, progressive talk radio. And it's interactive, too, which is a fancy way of saying he takes your phone calls. Toll free at 1-888-5-PETER-B. Fasten your seatbelt and let's take a ride in Peter B.'s America.
It's time for some Bradness. What do you say, huh? Friday night, some election integrity.
Oh, I came here tonight. I got the feeling that something ain't right. I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you. Yes, I'm stuck in the middle with you.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show, 7 minutes after the hour. Brad Friedman joins us per usual here on Fridays, and this boy is on fire, almost literally. Is the fire out in Baldwin Park, Brad?
The fire, I believe it is at least contained at
right.
this point. So not Baldwin Park, Griffith Park.
Griffith Park, I'm sorry.
Threatening the famous observatory.
And Catalina's on fire today?
And now Catalina's on fire, yes. But we are at an even safer distance from Catalina.
Well,
so the Bradblog World News headquarters is, in fact, safe tonight and able to continue our groundbreaking reporting.
Well, and there's a lot to talk about. It's interesting because one of my elves emailed me a link last night and said, you got to watch this. And it was a powerful exchange between Congressman Wexler and one Alberto Gonzalez. and I was riveted by it, watched it, and then at the very end, the YouTube clip switched to the Brad Blog tag.
Is that right?
It was stuck in the middle, yeah.
All right, well, that means we're on it. Word's getting out.
You're viral.
Or something.
Yeah. Well, we'll get to that clip.
I don't know how long those hearings were yesterday. I tried to watch just about all of them, and that clip, which I think you mentioned you may have later, that clip was really at the heart of those hearings. And Wexler, frankly, as he always is in these hearings, was the most on point. And, boy, he just opened up a can of whoop-ass on Gonzalez, it seemed to me.
Yeah, and we will share that with you a little bit later in the hour. You have also been hot on the trail of some voter fraud committed by a neocon blonde.
Yes, that is a huge story breaking this afternoon. It turns out we've talked about it before, and Coulter, your best friend, had committed voter fraud in Palm Beach County, Florida in 2006 when she registered under the incorrect address. She's been lying about it ever since. I've been reporting about it ever since at Brad Blog. And we've got her dead to rights there with her registration form and everything else. And the Palm Beach Registrar Election Supervisor, Arthur Anderson, has been trying to find someone to prosecute the case down there. Well, we have a new turn of events this morning. Palm Beach Post is reporting that the FBI seems to have interceded in the matter told the Palm Beach Sheriff's Office, who was looking into it, that Coulter had a very good excuse for putting the wrong address on her voter registration form. In fact, it was because she had a stalker by the name of Dan Borchers.
I remember Dan.
Indeed. Dan is a Brad Blog guest blogger. He's a Christian conservative. And he's been highly critical of Ann Coulter for some time. And so this was an interesting report, and Dan had given me a heads up about it yesterday because, well, as it turns out, he's actually not a stalker. At least no such charges have been brought to him. About 10 years ago, he was handing out flyers in D.C. titled Wanted, The Truth About Ann Coulter, as he was working on a biography, a book about her. He's very critical, feels she's not a true conservative, and he's, you know, released reports at Brad Blog and elsewhere on these matters. Well, as it turns out, for some reason, the FBI showed up. This was 1998, asked him a few questions for about 5 minutes, and that was that. He hasn't heard from them since until today. The story about the FBI interceding in the matter comes out. Palm Beach Sheriff's Office closes the case, says there's nothing there, even though they apparently never interviewed Coulter or anyone else. And furthermore, as the Brad Blog can now report, this fella, Jim Fitzgerald, the FBI agent, was, in fact, Ann Coulter's boyfriend.
Really? She's got one?
Yeah, she's got one.
Huh. Well, Jake in Arcata is going to be disappointed.
I know.
Because I know. He thinks she's actually a man.
Yeah, I'll leave that to you. I'm already in enough trouble with this story. So it appears that Ann Coulter's former boyfriend, who is apparently still a friend of hers, has visited her down in Florida, I'm told by yet another source late this afternoon, interceded. And Federal Bureau of Investigations is now apparently investigating his interceding in that case because it would seem to be wholly inappropriate for an FBI man to get into a matter of a local election matter like that. And well, it's just an incredible story, probably more than I can even get across to you on the radio, but we've got all the details and including documentation of this Fitzgerald character showing up recently at the Conservative Political Action Conference where Borchers had been thrown out this year by Ann Coulter's goons.
Well, now, we talked about that story.
Yeah.
I remember it vividly.
Yeah.
Now to connect this to an FBI agent, has Borchers been able to ID this Fitzgerald fellow?
He says he would recognize him if he saw him, but he probably doesn't need to, because as it turns out, when he was thrown out this year from the 2007 CPAC, he was later given a refund because, you know, he was registered for the three-day conference.
Mm-hmm.
And last year, in 06, by the way, he covered it for Bradblog. He had Bradblog media credentials out there. In any case, he was thrown out. They sent him a refund for his 3 days at the conference. It was signed by the director of the conference, Lisa De Pasquale, who happens to be Coulter's publicist. And the refund, the cover letter for the refund, was CC'd to Jim Fitzgerald.
Really?
Of the Federal Bureau of Investigations.
Wow.
Now, it gets even crazier in that he had filed criminal assault charges after he was thrown out of that event, because he was literally roughed up by her goons, mm-hmm. as he calls them. And when the police then looked into it, the Metropolitan Police officer had recommended these two guys be arrested. Unfortunately, when the tape of the event was given to them by CPAC, Dan Borchers was nowhere on the tape. Well, it turns out there was two different tapes, two different incidents that day. One he wasn't in, one he was in, and CPAC has apparently never turned over the event, showing him at the center of this scuffle, being roughed up and thrown out. And for some reason or another, the D.C. Metropolitan Police ended up also dismissing the case.
Wow.
Lack of evidence.
Well, and for people who don't recall, this event was where Ann Coulter was caught on videotape dinging John Edwards with a faggot joke and other things that weren't really very funny. They were just slams at Democrats. And apparently she was lamely trying to keep up with Bill O'Reilly's name-calling ability, trying to get up to 6.8 per minute.
Yes, it's very impressive, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, and hard to achieve.
That's right, and thank you for mentioning that, because we've got a video on that today as well at Bradblog. Scroll down. Boy, we got a lot if you scroll down that front page on all of this stuff. But, yeah, as a matter of fact, after she made that comment, we were also able to report just a couple of weeks ago that CPAC, after, mind you, Ann Coulter is the superstar of CPAC. She is their closing event. Every year, she packs the house. I mean, she's just an absolute rock star there. And yet, they have removed her from the Best of CPAC 2007 video, finally this year, based on her comments about John Edwards. I guess when she called Arabs ragheads at last year's event,
mm-hmm.
that was fine. That stayed in. But I guess she crossed over the line this year. Now, I should also add, in addition to Lisa De Pasquale being the director of CPAC and Ann Coulter's publicist, the security chief of CPAC is a fellow by the name of Floyd Resnick, who is also Ann Coulter's personal bodyguard. So CPAC may stand for the Coulter Political Action Conference. I'm not sure. But
it's certainly full employment for her and her pals.
No doubt. And with all of these guys involved and the FBI, her former beau, showing up there as well, well, I wonder how long this Fitzgerald fella at the FBI is going to have a job at this point.
This is very interesting and certainly could shame or embarrass the Palm Beach officials into reopening the case, wouldn't you think?
Well, I would hope that that will happen. It sure should happen. I mean, he's had Arthur Anderson has had a hell of a time finding anyone to prosecute this. He first went to the state attorney who declined, who had recently himself been burned in the Rush Limbaugh drug case.
Mm-hmm.
He then went to the town of Palm Beach. They looked at the case. They found that there appears to be two third-degree felonies and one first-degree misdemeanor that Coulter has accomplished, but they declined to take it because the crimes were not committed inside the town of Palm Beach. Then it went to the Palm Beach Sheriff's Office. That's where it is now, and Anderson has said that he's going to mull this latest report that's come back from the police, from the Sheriff's Office, showing that it was shut down, and decide whether he's going to go to Florida State law enforcement about it. To his credit, he does seem to be trying to get some action on this case, mm-hmm. but it's incredible that no one will take the case.
I think they should refer it to a nearby U.S. attorney's office. That's where the real crackdown on voter fraud is based.
Well, that's right. We got Republicans yelling voter fraud everywhere, but here we actually have one that we can prove, and nobody is bringing charges.
We're going to take a break and return with Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Go to the blog and read all about it. More in a moment, plus your phone calls. Join us toll-free, 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. You've got the Peter B. Collins Show. So what are you going to do with it?
Hey, this is Stephanie Miller. You're listening to the station that encourages you to think for yourself. What a concept. AM 540 KRXA.
Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares. The Carmel Valley Market is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Carmel Valley residents can now easily access the tradition of service and quality made famous by the Higuera family at the Grove Market in Pacific Grove. The Carmel Valley Market features the finest selection of fresh local fruits and veggies, as well as a full-service old-fashioned meat counter with USDA choice cuts. And don't forget the deli with delicious fresh sandwiches made to order. The Carmel Valley Market is located at 2 Chambers Lane, just behind Wells Fargo in Carmel Valley Village. Let the Carmel Valley Market's professional staff meet all of your grocery needs. Stop by and say hello to Ian and Gary Higuera, members of Charlie's family.
Make this Mother's Day special. Treat mom to a delicious slice of Mexico at La Flor de Oaxaca, Carmel's only Mexican restaurant. Delight your senses and your palate in particular. Discover La Flor de Oaxaca this Mother's Day and meet chef owner Conrado Geronimo. La Flor de Oaxaca is located at the southwest corner of Dolores at 5th in Carmel by the Sea and is normally open Monday through Saturday for lunch and dinner from 11 to 9. And this Sunday, May 13th, Mother's Day, they'll be open from 4:30 to 9. Mom will love enchiladas San Felipe's or enchiladas verdes with a wine from the house list. La Flor de Oaxaca's mission is to serve you the best Mexican cuisine with an emphasis on the unique and delicious flavors of Oaxaca. La Flor de Oaxaca will be open this Sunday, Mother's Day. Make Mom's Day extra special with delicious Mexican food and live marimba music at La Flor de Oaxaca from 4:30 to 9. Don't miss the fun and delicious food.
Now let's take a look at traffic. Let's take the latest. We do have a problem reported. Let's see. It looks like, CHP telling us about a situation in Santa Cruz, northbound 1 at M-Line. The off-ramp road closed 24 hours a day for road work. Other than that, no major stalls or accidents. Although we are just getting word of a new problem. It's in a Del Monte 4, 17-mile drive at Spanish Bay. A vehicle overturned and landed on its wheel. CHP is on scene there. In Soquel, Porter Street at Soquel and San Jose Road, we have a two-vehicle crash. That accident actually blocking the intersection at this point. And in Castroville, Preston Street at Merritt, we have an accident reported as well. Two vehicles involved. CHP is on scene. And this report is brought to you by NBC News.
time for more now on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Heard the people say something rotten happened here on election day. The judge said, sorry, people, you can't look at what's inside. These machines are corporate secrets. This ain't the time for civic pride. If you want to be a voter, Sarasota, because the judge here told us your vote doesn't have to count. 18,000 votes are missing. Is anybody listening? Electronic voting's in. Democracy is out.
Yes, that's a great tune, The Battle of Sarasota, and it continues. Brad Friedman's with us here on the Peter B. Collins Show. And Brad has kept us up to date on the contested elections around the country, including four congressional races last fall in Florida. And just last week, Clint Curtis joined us to talk about, or maybe it was 2 weeks ago, the issues that he has raised, where he went door-to-door and got people to sign affidavits that they had actually voted for him. And the total of those affidavits exceeds the total count for Clint Curtis by a very significant margin. And despite the presentation of that information to the House Administration Committee, it appears that Rush Holt and his friends, Brad, didn't even delve in to the information that the Curtis campaign brought forward and dismissed this contest without really looking into it.
Yeah, that seems to be exactly what happened. They did not want to, it's taken them 6 months to deal with the Christine Jennings, Vern Buchanan election. So I think they didn't want to deal with these other four that were pending before them, where they had hard evidence, as Clint Curtis put it, and they dismissed it unanimously. And I talked to Clint the night before the dismissal, and apparently he had hundreds of more affidavits that were sworn affidavits signed by voters, and they chose not even to look at them, and instead the U.S. House Administrative Committee decided that because we have secret ballots, affidavits from voters are not admissible as far as who they voted for or not. So this means that you can't use an affidavit to prove there was an election fraud here.
Mm-hmm.
The machines down in Sarasota, by the way, were touchscreen, not Sarasota, in Clint's district, mm-hmm. 24th district, had no paper trail whatsoever, as much good as that would do. They won't let him or his campaign have access to the machines or the source code. So you tell me, how exactly is someone supposed to come up with enough evidence in such a case to prove that there was an election fraud? It just seems completely impossible. And I spoke with a couple of different Capitol Hill staffers who basically said the same thing. You know, they said, yeah, I agree. I don't know what they can do, but I don't know what we can do. There's no evidence. And, of course, that underscores everything that you and I have been talking about, you know, going on years now,
mm-hmm.
Which is wrong with these electronic voting systems. If there is a fraud, if an election is flipped, is gamed in any way, where do you get the evidence? And that's exactly what he's up against after months and months of combing, going door-to-door, precinct to precinct, to get this information that showed that in the precincts that they walked, he was getting 12 to 24% higher number of votes than was shown in those precincts. Mind mm-hmm. you, he lost by 16 points, which means 8 points in Clint's favor would have meant that he beat Feeney, and in fact he was showing 12 to 24% point increases in each of these precincts.
Yeah. The other ignominy was that the administration committee voted out the H.R. 811, called the Voter Confidence and Increased Accessibility Act, and thanks to Chris and Salinas, he forwarded a self-congratulatory email that was sent to him by Rush Holt. And see what it takes for you to choke on this, all right, Brad? H.R. 811, which would require that electronic voting machines produce a voter-verified paper ballot, and would require routine random audits of voting systems. The bill authorizes federal money to help states make the transition to verifiable voting systems. It protects intellectual property and access for voters with disabilities. It's the product of years of input, cooperation, and hard work by computer scientists, election officials, voting rights, and disability rights activists, and others?
You know, at least it wasn't as bad as PFAS, People for the American Way's press release on this. But, yeah, it doesn't take much for me to choke on it when he says paper ballot. You know, I guess, Peter, if you write down next November, you write down who you want to vote for and you hand me that piece of paper, I guess that's a voter-verified paper ballot, even though it will never be counted in the election. It's close enough, close enough for Rush Holt. The bill will still allow, it's been voted out of committee now, it will still allow electronic voting systems with paper trails, not paper ballots, that will never be counted by anyone.
We got to take a break and we'll return with Brad Friedman, and Alberto Gonzalez will join us in the next segment, Against His Better Judgment. If you have a comment, call us toll free at 888-5-PETER-B. I'm Peter B. Collins.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Hi, I'm Patty Ross, Realtor. What pops into your mind when you hear the word real estate? Security? Investment? White picket fences? Did you know that real estate is the single most sought-after asset on the planet? More people have accumulated wealth through real estate than by any other means. So whether you own property and want to cash in your equity, or simply want to take advantage of buying in this changing market, you need a qualified agent who understands market conditions and will listen to your needs. From Santa Cruz to Salinas, from Carmel to Big Sur, call me, Patty Ross, for a free consultation. I'm hardworking, experienced, and I care about you. Hey, forget the rest, get the best. Call me, Patty Ross. My heart's in it.
Contact Patty Ross at Keller Williams Realty in Carmel at 622-6235. That's 622-6235, or visit her website, pattyrosscarmel.com.
Doesn't it seem that the service is lacking at most service stations? Well, not at the Carmel Shell at Rio Road and the Valero at Mid Carmel Valley Shopping Center. We take care of our customers. Carmel Shell is happy to pump your gas and check under your hood at your request for no extra charge. At Mid Carmel Valley Valero, we offer expert car repair at reasonable rates with a fast turnaround. We do tune-ups, brakes, safety checks, and a 26-point inspection with an oil change. We specialize in Lexus and Toyota. Our mechanic is ASE certified. Call us at 624-0722. That's 624-0722. Carmel Shell at Rio Road and Mid Carmel Valley Valero, putting the service back in service stations.
The healthcare system is broken. That doesn't mean you have to be. Capitola Physical Therapy helps you return to the level of function you need with skilled personal attention. Whether it's golf, tennis, walking, or simply getting out of bed and maintaining your balance, Capitola Physical Therapy understands, cares, and knows how to help. Call Capitola Physical Therapy at 475-1200. That's 475-1200.
Attention all KRXA listeners. Are you worried about not having enough money for a truly comfortable retirement? Were you aware that you've had the ability to buy real estate within your individual retirement account without government penalty since 1974? Bet you didn't know that. Only 2% of the U.S. population is even aware of the law. If your IRA had been invested in California real estate 20 years ago, you'd be a multimillionaire today. The retirement specialist will show you how to purchase California property right inside your IRA. They've helped nearly 10,000 people in the last four decades achieve their retirement goals by rolling over their IRAs and 401ks into profitable California real estate. Give them a call at 831-794-8485 to learn more about this underutilized retirement investment. That's 831-794-8485. If you want to achieve financial independence by the time you retire, then call now. There's nothing to lose, only valuable knowledge to gain. Call 831-794-8485 and ask for the retirement specialist.
I'm Todd Hurlbert, and I invite you to listen to The Week in Politics at our new time, 7 p.m. Monday nights. We're Monterey's hardest hitting political hot talk. We cover local politics, also tell you what's going on in Washington, D.C. And most importantly, we take your calls and find out what you think. So if you haven't listened to us before, find out what we're all about. Monday night, 7 p.m. It's The Week in Politics. See you there.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
And I would like to take a moment here to thank the makers of Canadian Club.
Yeah!
That is the medicine of choice of me, Peter B. Collins. Miraculously recovering my voice after 2 days of laryngitis. Got about 80% of it back. Thanks, Canadian Club. On the rocks, please.
Face in the shower door. Cowboy smile came and faded. I reached for my towel on the floor. I didn't think it was exactly where I laid it. You don't scare me, you don't scare me, I said. Do whatever it was.
This one's for Alberto.
He knew I understand. He was the ghost of a Texas ladies man.
That's how I think of Alberto Gonzalez, kind of a Texas ladies man. And there he was again, facing the heat on Capitol Hill yesterday before John Conyers' House Judiciary Committee. And as I mentioned at the top of the hour, a friend sent me this clip that I learned at the end came from Brad Blog. And I want to thank you, Brad, for investing the $5 for C-SPAN 3. I think I'm going to have to follow your lead because I came home last night and I found almost zero coverage. The NewsHour mentioned that it had happened, but it was in the news summary. They didn't do a lengthy story. And I couldn't find any commercial TV coverage of it either. And I actually three times flipped over to C-SPAN, but they were not showing these hearings.
Well, you know, C-SPAN 1 and 2, when the House or the Senate is in session, they have to, by law or by somebody's rules, they actually have to show what's going on in the House floor and the Senate floor. So, yeah, the C-SPAN 3 has been great. It's the best television going on right now with all of these unbelievable investigations going on. And when I realized it was $5 to get it, it was a great deal.
Yeah, well, next time I contribute to Brad Blog, I'm going to add $5.
Thank you, sir. I much appreciate that.
And by the way, just since I've mentioned that, if you can help Brad out, this is a labor of love on his part. I have no idea how he pays his rent every month. And you can go to bradblog.com, and there's a clear indication there of where you can make a contribution to keep his work going on. So set this up for us.
You can make a monthly subscription of any amount you want. So, you know, if all of your listeners subscribe for $5 a month, why, we'll be in good shape.
And can I put you in my will, too?
Yeah, please. I would appreciate that.
I'll leave you my holdings in South America.
Very kind of you. Thank you.
I got a ranch in Paraguay right next to bushes. Okay, so Robert Wexler, Democrat from Florida, really got wound up in his exchange with Gonzalez yesterday.
Yes, he did. And not only did he get wound up, he was right on target because this hearing had gone on for hours. And, you know, the question was and is, who created this list of now, what are we up to, 9 or 10 fired U.S. attorneys?
Right.
And everyone in the all of his assistants have said they haven't done it. Gonzalez's, you know, the attorney general, assistant deputy attorney generals, they've all said they haven't done it.
Right.
And in this clip I think you'll hear, he says neither Bush or Cheney did it.
Right.
And Conyers came out later in the day and said the breadcrumbs are going straight to 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue.
It's an all new Immaculate Conception. Let's sit back and listen to this. It's very powerful stuff from yesterday.
Gentleman from Florida. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Your permission, Mr. Attorney General, I'd like to follow the chairman's questions regarding Mr. Iglesias. If I understand it correctly, you testified that Karl Rove talked to you about voter fraud in New Mexico in fall 2006?
Yes, New Mexico and two other jurisdictions, that's correct.
Mr. Iglesias is selected for the termination list in early November. 2006?
I think on Election Day. His name, well, I don't know when he was selected. I wasn't involved in that process.
Right.
But
it appears on
looking
the list.
At the documents,
right.
he first appears on the list on Election Day.
And it's your testimony. You did not select him to put, you did not select Mr. Iglesias to be put on the list, correct?
His name was brought forward to me, recommended,
right.
Along with
you,
others.
You did not select him. Did Mr. Sampson select him?
Mr. Sampson was charged with coordinating this effort.
He didn't select him.
Well, I have not spoken with Mr. Sampson about
right.
this.
Did former Deputy Attorney General Mr. Comey, did he select him?
Of course, he wasn't in the department at that time. So
he didn't select.
I don't think he selected him.
So. That's right. Did Mr. McNulty select him?
I haven't asked that question, Mr. Yeah. McNulty.
Mr. McNulty told us he didn't select him. Did Mr. Margolis select him?
Again, I haven't spoken with Mr. Margolis.
We've talked a lot about the president's authority to have who he wants where. Did the president select Mr. Iglesias to be put on the termination
list? No,
the president didn't select him. Did the vice president select him to put him, Mr. Iglesias, on the termination list?
No.
Okay, so the president didn't, the vice president didn't, you, the attorney general, didn't, all of the assistant and former deputy attorney generals didn't put Mr. Iglesias on the termination list. So who did?
Well, what's important, Congressman, is that there was a consensus recommendation made to me. Whether or not how we got on the list is less important.
So a group of people put him on the list?
What's less important is that I accepted a recommendation and I made the decision. I accept responsibility for the decision.
You made a decision, according to yourself, as to accepting the termination list. But you've also said you didn't put him on the list. So somebody else other than you, other than the president, other than the vice president, other than every deputy attorney general that's come to this committee, put him on the list. But with all due respect, Mr. Attorney General, you won't tell the American people who put Mr. Iglesias on the list to be fired. It's a national secret, isn't it?
Congressman, if I knew the answer to that question, I would provide you the answer. I have not spoken with the individuals.
Hey, so you don't know who put it on the list, Mr. Iglesias. Why was Mr. Iglesias put on the list by this mystery person?
Well, again, I wasn't surprised to see Mr. Iglesias' name recommended to me based upon conversations that I had with a senior senator from New Mexico. He had lost confidence in Mr. Iglesias. Let me just say, Mr. Iglesias' story is a great one. It's the American dream. And there are many good things about his performance, and I very much admire him as a person.
But you won't tell the American people who put him on a list to terminate his employment.
I accept responsibility for this.
But you accept responsibility for making the decision ultimately to accept the termination list, but you will not come forth and tell the American people who put Mr. Iglesias on the list to be fired.
Out of respect for the integrity of this investigation and the investigations occurring at the Department of Justice, I have not made that inquiry with respect to other fact witnesses.
But you were okay with firing them, but you won't tell us who made the recommendation to fire him.
I think I was justified in relying upon the senior leadership in the department, as I understand.
Do you know what Mr. Moschella told this committee about why... about why Mr. Iglesias was put on the list? He said the rationale was because he was an absentee landlord. Are you familiar with that?
I'm familiar with Mr. Moschella's public testimony.
Right. He delegated authority, apparently, Mr. Iglesias.
Well, let me just say this. I did not make the decision with respect to Mr. Iglesias.
I know you haven't made any decision, Mr.
Service.
You have been very clear about that.
I accept full responsibility for this.
But you won't tell us who put Mr. Iglesias on that list?
You would have a better opportunity and to access.
I would.
The committee would.
Are you the Attorney General? Do you run the Department of Justice?
Yes, I do. And it's been frustrating to me to not be able to ask these kinds of questions. But I want to respect the integrity of this investigation and the investigation going on in the department.
Oh yeah.
If we all came up here and had the same...
When did the investigation in the department start?
If we all came up here...
It started after they were fired, didn't
it? And had the same testimony about events that occurred over 2 years, you would look at that with great suspicion. You would wonder, have you guys talked to each other about facts?
Sir, you know the
answers. I have not.
You know them, and it has nothing to do with an investigation that's occurring after these people were fired, because you know the answer before they were fired, because you know who put them on the list, but you won't tell us. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Wow, watch Alberto squirm. You've got to see that for yourself at bradblog.com.
Unbelievable, huh?
It really is.
And this is what Gonzalez was like all day. I mean, like he couldn't give a damn. He wasn't concerned about it. He thought it was a joke. And, well, he's just not worried about it. It's not an issue to him.
Well, and he's told
he
his...
He knows who you know, put these people on the list, and he won't say. I mean, that's... Shouldn't, isn't that illegal? Isn't he compelled to answer a congressman who asks a direct question like that?
Well, you would hope so. You would hope that just on a basis of personal honor, he would provide a complete answer, which is either, I don't know, they didn't tell me because I'm not really in charge here, or I'm so incompetent, I didn't bother to ask. But there is no available answer other than to take, to actually take responsibility for it by answering the question, not just by repeatedly asserting that he's taking responsibility for it.
Yeah, they don't care. It's as if they're saying, well, come and get us. There's nothing you can do because they, frankly, I think they suspect that Democrats aren't going to have the cojones, if you will, to do what they need to do, which in this case, again, file impeachment charges against Alberto Gonzalez.
Yeah, I fully support that, and I think the evidence there is pretty strong. And, of course, it's been presented to now the very committee, the Judiciary Committee, where such a bill of impeachment would originate. So we have to ask if John Conyers is going to consider that. I certainly hope he will.
I hope he will. I haven't heard anything about it. They've been very busy with all of this stuff trying to figure it out. And, of course, it's Friday, and I haven't even been able to keep up as far as how many thousands of documents were dumped from Lord knows where this weekend. But
yeah.
This just keeps going on and on. And the question is anybody going to do anything about it?
The other thread that got a little fatter this week is one that is consistent with the angle that you have been working on, related to high-level Republican activists who, in one manner or another, infiltrated the Justice Department. And we learned that the U.S. attorney in Kansas City was sacked and was temporarily replaced by a fellow named Schatzman, who had been at the Justice Department in Washington, and his fingerprints are on the illegal decision relating to IDs required for voters in Florida, and in Georgia, and also the violations of the law, the Voting Rights Act, that occurred when Tom DeLay drew a whole new map for districts in Texas.
Yeah.
Both of those issues were rejected by the career staff attorneys in the Voting Rights Division at the Justice Department. They were overruled by Schatzman, who was then sent in to parachute into Kansas City to fix a little problem there with the so-called voter fraud investigations.
Yeah, and after Schlossman, actually, Bradley Schlossman.
Schlossman, okay, I changed his name.
Evil Brad. He overturned that. The career officials at the Department of Justice started scramming at that point because they were so disturbed, and both of those laws were later overturned by the Supreme Court. Then Schlossman goes to Kansas City, replaces Todd Graves, and there's going to be a lot more on that, and I've had a lot more over the past week or two about this. But he goes out there, he replaces Todd Graves, files these unprecedented voter fraud charges against four different workers at Acorn, which is a liberal group that registers minority voters in,
right,
minority areas. Files voter fraud charges against them in violation of the Justice Department's own rules for this, which state, you don't bring these sorts of charges in the heat of an election. He filed these things the day before the election in Missouri with an incredibly close Senate race out there between Talent and McCaskill, clearly in hopes of affecting that election. A Justice Department official has said, well, we have an unwritten rule that you can go ahead and do that if there's voter fraud.
Oh, wow.
Never mind the fact that all of these cases against Acorn going back to 2004 have been thrown out. And, in fact, it is Acorn themselves who alerts the elections officials when they find these fraudulent registration forms.
Now, what about the case in Reno? I think it was 2004, where a Republican group was registering voters, and they would permit people to register as Democrats long enough to accept the forms and then rip them up and throw them away.
Yeah.
Anybody investigating that one, Brad?
No, of course not. No, that's in the Ann Coulter voter fraud file, I guess.
All right, we take a break and return. Got a caller on the line. You can join us, too, at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. And Brad's going to tell us about a Diebold deputy who is now being named Registrar of Voters in San Diego County. That's coming up next, right here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
News, commentary, and your phone calls. If it's happening in America, it'll be right here on 540 AM Radio, KRXA.
I have always said that I will listen to the requests of our commanders on the ground.
Mr. President, you did not listen. You continue to pursue a failed strategy that is breaking our great Army and Marine Corps. I left the Army in protest in order to speak out. Mr. President, you have placed our nation in peril. Our only hope is that Congress will act now to protect our fighting men and women.
Why are realtors from Los Angeles spending hundreds of thousands of dollars to defeat Measure A here in Monterey County?
It sure isn't because they want to save our farmland.
The developers and supervisors oppose Measure A because it puts an end to their cozy development deals.
Cozy development deals like the massive Rancho San Juan development that was approved by the Board of Supervisors but rejected by 76% of voters.
It's true. 76% of the voters oppose Rancho San Juan because it was wrong for Monterey County. But the developers pushed it through anyway.
That's why we need to pass ballot Measure A to protect our quality of life.
Measure A is a common-sense, community-minded plan to control growth that was written by the people of Monterey County.
It lets the people decide how fast we should grow.
So join the League of Women Voters and the California Nurses Association, who all support Measure A, because it lets the community have a voice about our future.
And that's why the Community General Plan Committee paid for this message. Vote yes on Measure A.
How would you like to stop your taxes from paying for war? You can support the War Tax Option Act, which adds a checkbox to your tax form that stops your taxes from funding war. This frees up your tax money to pay for other vital programs that you care about. For more information, call 831-521-6042 or visit wartaxoption.org.
All righty then, let's take a look at the latest, and let's mention that we do have a problem. CHP telling us about a crash and our page, unfortunately. Here we go. Live radio, folks. Santa Cruz, or actually Del Monte 4, 17-mile drive at Spanish Bay. Injury crash still reported. An overturned vehicle actually landed back on its wheels. CHP is on scene. And we had a crash in, another problem to tell you about in Salinas. This is Blanco Road at Davis. Two vehicles are on the right shoulder. CHP also present. Watsonville, southbound 1, just at Pajaro River Bridge. We have a stalled vehicle apparently blocking the left turn lane, so heads up for this particular situation. And Highway 17, no major stalls or accidents there. Other than that, there really are a little bit of slow traffic from southbound 1 from Carmel to Monterey.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show, 9 minutes away from the hour, as we continue with Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. And, Brad, you posted an item here that really caught my attention today. A woman who had been working in Solano County, California, east of San Francisco. That's the Davis area where the campus is, UC Davis. Is on her way to become the new Registrar of Voters in San Diego County. And she has interesting ties to the Diebold Corporation.
Yeah, as if the people in San Diego, or the People's Republic of San Diego, as I like to call them, haven't had it bad enough. Their new registrar is a former Diebold salesperson. She's worked as a salesperson for Diebold and for Sequoia. And this revolving door where we see these, you wonder why the hell these elections officials are using these machines in the first place, which have been shown time and again to be inaccurate, to be vulnerable to hacking and everything else. Well, a lot of them leave their jobs as elections officials and go to the voting machine companies in the private sector and make a whole lot of money. Some of them, like this woman, Deborah Seiler, goes from the voting machine companies back into the public sector to be the registrar, and that's exactly what this Deborah Seiler did. And John Gideon has a report today on Brad Blog that we broke just before coming on the air. Apparently, she is the woman who she used to work as the registrar in Solano County. She left to go work at Sequoia. Then she went to go work at Diebold, where she proceeded to sell 1,200 voting machines to the Solano County, where she once worked. They bought them and found out later that they were never federally tested or qualified, which led to Diebold not being allowed to sell anything in California for a while, as those systems were decertified, and it cost the county some $400,000. But apparently they weren't too upset because they hired her back, which is where she has been working until now, when she'll be heading down to San Diego to join Michael Vu, who is the registrar from Cuyahoga County, Ohio, who has his own dubious record. He oversaw the rigged presidential election recount, and we had two poll election workers who were just convicted to the maximum for that. The judge said he thought it went higher to include Vu. There's additional criminal investigations going on into Michael Vu's 2006 election. And San Diego County had just hired him as their new assistant registrar since he freed up after being forced to resign from his job in Cuyahoga County. That's all going on down there in San Diego. Good luck to them.
Wow. That's just stunning. And we really, I guess we do need to address this revolving door issue because these privatized voting machine companies are so incestuously connected to the people who buy the machines and then operate elections, and it's a real cycle that clearly can lead to various irregularities in the election process.
What was it that Scooter Libby wrote to Judith Miller in jail?
The Aspens, when the Aspens turn?
The Aspens turn in clusters because they're all connected by the root.
Let's take a call. This is Drew in Monterey, and let's see how long it takes him to mention George Soros. Hey, Drew.
Hey, yeah, you know, I wanted to talk a little bit about that, but I won't get into it. I'll call you next week.
Drew, over at Brad Blog, there's an update on the Bill O'Reilly name-calling episode. You might want to take a look.
Well, you know, the reason I brought up George Soros in regards to Michael Savage is because he's funding like Lynn Woolsey, Maxine Waters, Bernie Sanders, and a bunch of other politicians that he has in his pocket on a bill called H.R. 3302. Your listeners might want to look into it. And another caller that called right after me said, well, what about George Bush? He's a threat to the nation. And what about Rupert Murdoch? I absolutely agree. See, a lot of people assume, because I defend Michael Savage, that I'm like a Bushy, which clearly I'm not. Bush is an atrocity.
What are you defending Michael Savage from, by the way?
Oh, I referred to him as causing more damage to the nation's psyche than Don Imus, and that upset Drew.
Well, and certainly more than George Soros. I mean, these guys are on the air every day making stuff up, lying to the American people. You know, they're going on and on about George Soros, which is just the most absurd thing I ever heard.
Well, see, that's
where
the
are the complaints about Richard Mellon's case?
You guys will defend George Soros, and, you know, I'm not going to defend people that I know are wrong. It's like instead of admitting that George Soros is bad,
well,
you just throw
in
there,
well,
George
Soros is
terrible.
Wrong about? What is he wrong about?
What is George Soros wrong about? Well, how about funding an attorney who committed treason?
Who would that be?
Lynn Stewart.
And how did
she was passing messages from a convicted terrorist, you know? She was passing, and he funded her, and she got off with a slap on the wrist she committed treason.
Drew, what is your source that he funded her?
Well, it's a well-known fact.
Well,
okay?
it's not,
a well-known
Drew,
fact
Drew,
George
Drew,
Soros funded
Drew,
her.
Lynn Drew,
Stewart, look into
Drew,
it.
I have never heard of this before, so it cannot be a well-known fact. What is the basis of your claim?
Okay, so since you've never heard of it, it must not be true, right?
No, I am simply asking. Hold on, Brad.
She found guilty of treason, and yet the Republican Department of Justice let her off the hook? Because, you know, treason is punishable by death. So why would they let her off the hook if she was found guilty of treason?
Well, she wasn't exactly found guilty of treason, and that's the thing. When you have people like George Soros throwing money at it, you can be defended, and it's not
True.
Like our justice system is perfect. You guys
True.
Come
okay,
on.
But you said
get away.
But you said that this woman
crimes all the time.
You said this woman was found guilty of treason. You just put that out on the airwaves, okay?
And it's
well,
not
I didn't
true.
Say she
you
was
said
found
George Soros
of
is bad and is funding her, but you have no idea where you have that information from. But you listen to Michael Savage, and I'm guessing a lot of Bill O'Reilly. And you know,
no,
got
I don't like Bill O'Reilly. I hate
air.
That little leprechaun. What are you talking about? So you
we got enough
because...
of that crap on the air. So here's my suggestion to you: get your facts straight before you show up on Peter B's show and
well,
get the story
I got,
right.
I got plenty of facts straight, you guys. And like I said, you can look into whether or not George Soros put money into Lynn Stewart's defense fund.
Is that illegal, by the way?
No, it's not illegal, but, you know...
But it makes him bad.
It's questionable on who he defends. He's also tried to bankrupt countries, and George Soros has also been quoted. You know, somebody asked
Hey, Drew,
him,
Drew, I got to go. I'm sorry. We'll catch you next time. Brad?
I have to talk to Drew next week.
Have a wonderful weekend, Brad.
Thank you, sir. You too.
I'm going to reclaim my voice, and we'll be back at you Monday. Same time, same radio stations. Thanks for listening to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Keep smiling.
Hey, good looking. What you got cooking? How's about cooking something up with me?
I'll tell you what I got cooking. Dinner's ready. I went to dinnersready.com, chose 8 gourmet dinners, made an appointment, and went to their storefront in the Country Club Gate Center in Pacific Grove and prepared the meals there myself. Now I'm cooking them in my own home.
What's that you say? Dinner's ready?
That's right, dinner's ready. It's the newest concept in home cooking. They do all the shopping and chopping, and I get all the credit. If you're too busy to go in and make your dinners, they'll even do it for you. So sign up at dinnersready.com, stop by and see them in the Country Club Gate Center in Pacific Grove, or give them a call at 645-9100. That's 645-9100. Dinner's ready.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. 4,000 acres have already burned on Santa Catalina Island. California fire officials say it's 35% contained, and they've turned the flames away from the city of Avalon. Still, CBS News correspondent Bill Whitaker reports it's been a dangerous day.
Authorities imposed a mandatory evacuation on much of Avalon. One house and several other structures have burned. More than 3,000 residents and tourists poured off ferries brought in to evacuate them to the mainland. Jane Lopez has lived on Catalina 15 years.
When we were leaving, the whole top area of the island was in big flames.
I'm Kelly Cobiella in Lake City, Florida, where the smoke is so thick and the wildfire closing in so fast that parents were told to get their children from the schools.
Are you concerned?
Now I am, because it's really, really getting smoky more than it has been in the last couple of hours.
In just 24 hours, the fire in northeast Florida and Georgia grew by more than 56,000 acres, the Florida portion tripling in size overnight.
That fire is one of more than 200 across the state. A U.S. general in Iraq makes an unusual public statement saying he needs reinforcements. CBS News correspondent Dan Raviv has that.
The American major general in charge of northern Iraq says to hold back, find, and kill insurgents, he needs more troops.
That has been made clear to my commanders, and I'm convinced they will provide them to me at the right time.
Benjamin Mixon focusing on Diyala province northeast of Baghdad, the level of violence very high. In a radio interview with CBS News, the general says progress is being made, and Congress should not set deadlines to leave. Dan Raviv, CBS News, Washington.
CBS News has learned details of a compromise on immigration reform secretly negotiated by a group of senators and the Bush administration. Capitol Hill correspondent Cheryl Atkinson says the plan calls for billions to be spent on border security and would require those in the country illegally now to register and pay fines.
Negotiators agree some critics who call for mass jailings or deportations of illegals will call this compromise amnesty and oppose it. But with the House indicating it'll follow the Senate's lead, it's still the last best hope for immigration reform anytime soon.